Blog Talk Radio.
Man, we dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're rooting, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Boxing fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live streaming on a Wednesday night. A little different. Life got in the way last night, so I had to push it back a day. Anyway, hope everybody's doing okay. You know, this one's going to be a quick show because, you know, there's really not much going on. We had a boring weekend. We got a boring weekend coming up, and there's some kind of arbitration? They just kidding, obviously. Just bullshit. And obviously, there's a ton to talk about in and outside the ring. Obviously, what everybody's talking about on boxing Twitter is Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury and that arbitration case that, you know, numerous times since we heard it go into mediation and then arbitration, we've talked about this. We discussed this. Jake Donovan was on last week. We both said we think Wilder will probably win the case. John, who's going to join us shortly, he talked about, now hold on, we're talking about this Fury-AJ fight and all that, but we still got to find out what's going to happen in this arbiter decision. And it came down, Wilder won, September 15th or something like that. Tyson Fury has to fight him. There's some details that we'll go over. And I'm just going to rant about it in general. When you look at the media, you know, the fanboys, I can understand. I get that. Now, this isn't all boxing fans. This isn't UK boxing fans. This, you know, shouts out to the UK. This is just bullshit is what it is. Like, your feelings don't have anything to do with a contract. I'm sorry to say. And we're going to get into this here because this is ridiculous. And it could have been already figured out. Some folks are talking about, well, the step-aside money, and then he'll get the winner. Okay, cool. But remember, AJ has to agree to that. Now, I'm not saying there's no way in hell he'd do it. Wrong pipe. And I don't mean a hash pipe. No, anyway. No, but AJ, that agreement that Fury and AJ have, the terms and the percentages, all that they would have to draw up a whole new negotiation because AJ would have to agree to that. There's a lot of things that goes, you know, that is easy to tell when it comes to this stuff. And there are so many media members and part-time media members that just listened to Bob Arum and kept just thinking Eddie Hearn, like the AJ Eddie Hearn side is a little less, you know, culpable, obviously, here. Because they were just listening, you know, to Bob Arum. Although, remember all the talk when Ruiz won the fight, AJ had the rematch clause and exercised that. Remember how Ruiz already signed the contract, dude? And some people are like, yeah, but that was a two-fight deal. Well, what the hell do you think this was? And they're saying Wilder ducked the fight and he waited it out. Dude, get your facts right. This shit has been going on so long, people forget. But we're going to talk about this. as you can tell. But let's not forget about inside the ring. Two things. Brandon Figueroa knocks out Luis Fury. Oh, God, it's even on my head. Neary. And then we're going to talk, of course, about the rest of that Showtime card, which that's the best triple header of the year, I'd have to say. That was a hell of a triple header. Everybody complaining about, you know, celebrity fights and all this shit. But yet, look at what we just came off of and look at what we're about to get into. And, of course, we're going to preview and predict Jose Ramirez and Josh Taylor, undisputed championship. The man that beat the man that beat the man that beat the man at 140. All the marbles on ESPN. And although ESPN's done a poor job promoting this puppy, they do have a healthy day of sports, including golf in the morning, and then a triple header of NBA playoffs. So hopefully that helps with the lead-in. Obviously, it should help no matter what, but I really would like to see the casuals get engaged Saturday night. Anyway, you know, there's, like I said, there's a ton to talk about. There's some other stuff out there on the low. Boots Ennis got some movement on his promotional dispute, so that's cool. Of course, we'll go over a little bit of fight news in boxing Twitter segment. The reason why I do the boxing Twitter segment is exactly what's going on boxing Twitter. Yeah, I'm sure it's going on in the forums. I'm sure it's going on YouTube. I've seen some of it. The boxing Twitter segment, we read tweets that are great. It's not all just about ripping people. We go, yes, dude, that's a dudette, right? That's a great tweet. But we also expose fanboys and media members acting like fanboys, and the amount of media members that didn't understand that what was going on in this thing. It's not really mind-boggling, though, because we've seen it really ever since the PBC came around. The Cold War, Bob Arum, Golden Boy, Showtime, HBO, that's where it all, people dug in, right? But then we could really see it when then all of a sudden Golden Boy, because remember, HBO dropped Al Haymon Fighters. That's what happened. They dropped the stable. And then when Golden Boy went back and there was a, you know, friction there, that's where we saw the media, which has been proven in court, a smear campaign, you know, clearly. But, yeah, this shit is just ridiculous, dude. And I just, you know, I can see, like, Sergio Mora, who's going to broadcast the fight, and it, you know, it's with the Zone. It's bullshit, but I can at least see that. But these are media members that aren't tied to anything. They don't broadcast or anything like that. And they're up here saying, oh, how the hell, this sucks, dude. I can't believe this happened. What are you talking about? You know, everybody wants to blame Deontay Wilder in this scenario, but Tyson Fury said it out of his own mouth before the decision. Let me repeat that. Before the decision, Tyson Fury recently said, I should have just fought Wilder in January and February. Because remember, his reasoning was, I want to stay busy. I'm training. I want to fight in December. Well, that didn't happen. And a lot of people saying, oh, Wilder, you know, was out of the limelight, and he was just waiting for, you know, this the clause came up, then he was whining about it. Dude, he was ready in October. Both guys were ready in October. We're going to get into this. Anyway, if this is your first time listening to the Ropadope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropadoperadio. You know, you don't have to go to Block Talk and Rope It Open. Download the show directly there. If you don't want to, you can find this platform on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spricker, almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a whole lot of places. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's boxing, football, basketball, baseball, everything in between. And one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have and you're not happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contract. You can stream it anywhere on any device. Of course, they have the cloud DVR available. And if you sign up for the choice package, that gives you a free year of HBO Max. Okay. And you know what? You know what's funny? This always happens. Like 2 weeks ago, when I was just saying obvious stuff, the Golovkin fanboys went into attack mode messaging. Unfollowing me. Oh, no. Don't unfollow. Now we got the fury. You know, the funny thing now, same thing, fanboys. Like I said, this isn't UK. This isn't Ukrainian fans. These are fanboys who I'm talking about. Okay? I've gotten along with several UK media, well, somewhat media members, and fans in general. I've had a lot of conversation. I love the UK fans. We're talking about fanboys here. We're talking about the one that they literally are like, oh, just wait for the third fight. Dude, I picked Tyson Fury to win the fight against Wilder. I picked him. I'm not trying to go out on the limb like, dude, I'm the one who called it. No. I'm just saying I'm not biased towards who's going to win or not. Contracts are contracts. And just like Ruiz couldn't get out of his contract with AJ when AJ exercised the rematch, he couldn't get out of that contract. I mean, he could, but you'd have to wait it out. You'd owe money. What is different here? And, you know, I when this happened, when Tyson Fury dipped and said, you know what, the rematch clause is done, I understood why. Why not? I didn't say he was going to duck anyone. He just got done beating, you know, Wilder's ass. However you think out there on both sides, he did it. It doesn't matter. He did. That's how it goes down in the books. We'll see if this third fight happens and what happens in it. But the whole point is I understand I'm going to make more money fighting AJ. Why not attempt to do this? Why not? You know, it makes sense. It does make sense. I'm not calling it a duck. I'm saying why not try? You know, give it your best shot. I don't sit there and call that a duck because he already fought him twice. And look at the last result. You know what I mean? Look at the last result. But these fanboys who are messaging me, unfollowing me on Twitter, I've had like in the last, since the Golovkin and Fury, I looked at it just before the show, there's been like over 400 unfollows in that time. And that's perfectly okay. I mean, if you followed me, you know I do a show. I originally got on Twitter to promote the show, right? So that's cool. I'm not complaining that you're unfollowing. Please unfollow me, you know? Because the people that followed me that were fanboys for Fury, remember when I was saying all those Wilder excuses are just that. You know, and so they were siding with me on that. Oh, yeah, you know, yeah, you're right. Tell it like it is, Chris. Tell it like it is. But then when I tell it like it is here, having picked Fury to beat Wilder in the second fight, now you're going to cry about it. Now you're going to say that I'm biased. What do you, just wait. There'll be no more excuses. What excuses I'm, if anything, you guys are the ones making the excuses. And I understand some of you are just lost causes, fanboys. That's cool. Some of you just listen to the media no matter what. And I don't know how many times this has to happen for you to just think for yourself. Or at least just look at it with an open mind. You know, we've said it several times in the last chunk of months. This arbitration ruling has to happen first. Stuff just doesn't randomly go to arbitration, dude. Now, did I know for a fact that this was going to be the outcome? No. Jake was on last week. We both agreed it was going to probably happen. Like I mentioned, John was on saying the same thing. Like, hey, we got to at least wait till the, you know, there's a case here. And it's just funny. It's just funny, dude. And you guys don't understand. People are talking about July. He didn't want Wilder didn't want it in July. What are you talking about, dude? COVID can't, like, push the fight back. Remember, it was a two-fight deal. The winner got 60-40. That means Fury in top rank in ESPN. Now, I'm not blaming Fury for the pushback. That has, I'm not saying that has nothing to do with him, but it's you know, it's Bob Arum and ESPN. And it made sense. So they said, all right, we're going to do it in October, right? Both fighters were ready to go in October. Everyone's making up these excuses or all this stuff about Wilder. Well, he didn't even have a trainer. He, how do you know he wasn't, because he wasn't posting videos? We don't think he was ready in October. He, once he exercised the rematch clause, he was ready to go for the rematch. Obviously. We've seen some guys recently, J-Rock, Herd, not take the rematch clause, let it expire. It expired. Yes, it did. That's true. But let's look at the circumstance. Wilder was ready. Did Team Wilder say, nah, dude, I'm not ready in October. We can't do it. No, Bob Arum came out and told everybody, we're trying to get some fans for this fight. So we're going to push it back to December, what was it, December 19th. Now, this is, now, for the UK fight fans or just boxing fans that don't pay attention to college football and football in general, this is what happened. This isn't a myth. This isn't an excuse. This isn't Wilder, okay? Remember, we're not talking HBO Showtime. HBO Showtime don't show, they don't broadcast the NFL or college football. We're talking about ESPN and Fox. And guess what? On December 19th, ESPN and Fox, and other channels too, had a bunch of college football conference championships. Not to mention, I think it was a doubleheader of NFL games, because usually it'd be 2 weeks earlier. It's the first week. The conference finals are always the first week in December. The first Wilder-Fury fight was on the first week of December, but it was just that, and those games are done by like 10, and then you can have it. But when you got the NFL on a Saturday, and this is what I'm saying, UK fight fans, the NFL goes generally on Sunday. They have Monday night and Thursday night, but as far as the main schedule, it's all day Sunday. Like I said, there's Monday night football, there's Thursday night football, but Sunday's their day, right? I mean, whenever the fuck they want to do anything is their day, but you know what I'm saying. Sunday is the main portion of the schedule. Saturday is college sports generally. But when you put NFL and college football, the two biggest sports, dude, it is dumb to go on those days. It just is. You'll get sucked up in that stuff. So it was a legit reasoning to go, hey, we got a date for you in January and a date for you in February. And before people talk about January, well, that's when the NFL playoffs are, Chris. Let's take that back, though. It was the last Saturday in January. And for those who don't know, there's a two-week break between the conference finals and the Super Bowl. In the first 3 to 5 days or so, people, everybody's either buzzed off of what happened in the conference finals or the Super Bowl, the matchup. Then all of a sudden, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, that weekend comes and people are like, oh, shit, we still got over a week before this game. I'm not saying the buzz dies down, but boxing has taken advantage of this date before, plenty of times. There's a two-week gap where there is no college football anymore. That's long gone by that time. And there's no NFL football, so they take advantage of it. The other date was similar to what the date was originally for the second fight, February something, when both of those are done, and NFL is done by that time. And when people say, oh, they knew college football was going on, someone just messaged me that. Dude, half of the, there's a Power Five conferences, okay? And the most popular viewership, everything, revenue, it's the SEC and the Big Ten. That's who runs it. Big 12 makes plenty of noise. ACC, Pac-12, that's fine. But we all know the SEC and the Big Ten are the biggest conferences. The SEC, ACC, Big 12, they were already scheduled to go. At the time, the Big Ten had delayed it. They were talking about playing in the spring. Then all of a sudden they said, screw it, we're going. So all of a sudden, when I say college football came back fully, that's what I mean. Next thing you know, it's like, oh, shit, well, we can't do it on this date. It makes sense. Just off the NFL games, it makes sense. Even if there was no college football, to be honest with you. So let's just get that straight. Now, they moved it to December 19th. Wilder didn't say, nah, dude, no, I can't fight October. And that's the same with Tyson Fury. He didn't say that. But since they controlled, they had the 60-40, they're broadcasting it, they controlled the fight that way, they pushed it back. And then both Fox and ESPN were like, dude, nah, let's just push it back, and then we can use the playoffs to promote the fight like we did the year before. That's what they wanted to do. This is not just made-up fantasy land. These are real facts. And Bob came out and said it. Not that you should listen to always listen to Bob, but these are basic facts, dude. So now I'm not going to act like I knew for 100% that I'm not Art Man. No, but I didn't know 100%, you know. But even last week on the podcast, I agreed with what Jake said as far as I think Wilder would win. And John was viewing that way too. And we, no matter what, he said it just last week or the week before or, you know, recently, that you got to have this decision. So this whole narrative that Wilder's the one who ruined it, when you literally, this is how fanboy this shit is. In smear campaign, this stuff is with the media. Out of his own mouth, Tyson Fury said, I should have just fought him. That's what I should have done. That was my mistake. I messed up. He said that before the decision. Mind you, he's been here for a couple weeks now in the U.S. when he's got a fight, quote-unquote, scheduled in, what, August 14th, in Saudi. You mean to tell me he couldn't find some dry weather someplace like Saudi to train? Anyway, this shit's funny. But like I said, keep unfollowing me. You know, the it started with the Canelo Golovkin, you know. A lot of people say, oh, I'm not watching another Canelo fight until he moves up to 175. I just simply asked and tweeted about, why didn't you put that pressure on Golovkin then? Why was it okay for him to stay at 160? He had 168 challenges. He could have went fought Frotch or obviously Andre Ward. And I was okay with him not going there. But remember, they're the one who said anyone from 54 to 68 can get it. We didn't say that. Their team said it. That's why some pressure was applied. But you know, what we heard from a lot of the media, no, Golovkin can stay there. You know, that's the problem with today's boxing. People move up and down, and yeah, that is true. People do jump weight classes too much, but you don't just use that little back burner excuse for everything, and that's what it is. If Canelo has to go to 175, all I said was, dude, why didn't you put that pressure on Golovkin? Oh, messages. I'm going to unfollow you, dude. I don't give two shits. And now these Fury fanboys, not Fury fans. I love Fury. I like Wilder. I love Wilder. I called out Wilder for some stuff, you know, his excuses. It's just, guys, it is what it is. Now, does this, now that, like I mentioned earlier, now they're talking about, oh, well, just do step-aside money and he'll get the winner. It's not that easy, though, guys. Because AJ has to, Hearn and AJ have to be on board. You can't just be like, all right, well, Fury said here's some money and that he'll fight the winner. Well, wonder if he loses. Mind you, they have a two-fight deal that they've been talking about for a year or whatever. Probably less than a year, but you know what I'm saying. So it is what it is. He should have just fought him in January, February. And guess what? If he would have won, which clearly he would have been the favorite, guess who would be, you know, the fans would be happy right now because they'd have this, August 14th date. They'd have it. They'd have the undisputed matchup as long as he won the fight, obviously. So to sit here and just, oh, my God, like Mora, you know, even if he is disowned, fuck that. Mora's out there talking about he blocked the fight. No, Tyson Fury blocked the fight, dude. He could have fought Wilder. He could have fought Wilder. Now, we know that the gate wouldn't have been as strong. And even this summer, you know, let's see. Hopefully Vegas is, you know, if this fight happens, hopefully Vegas is wide open, full capacity. We'll see what the gate does there. You know, we're going to get a chance to see how popular Fury is after that knockout here and for folks, hopefully, that can come. I don't know. Maybe Fury would be like, screw it, I'm just going to retire and then let some time go by and then I'm good. But, you know, we're going to talk to John about the legal ramifications off of, because when you have this decision, that can be used in a lawsuit, I assume. If you have this decision and then he ducks, he doesn't want the fight and he goes on to fight AJ, you know, if he doesn't fight Wilder by September or something, I'm assuming he can do something with this evidence. Because they didn't award him money. They said, yeah, you should get your fight. So it's crazy, dude. And normally I hate to lead with out of the ring stuff, but this stuff's ridiculous, guys. Get your feelings out of it. Contracts don't worry about your feelings. Do I want to see the Undisputed fight? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I do. But there's a contract. Just like Andy Ruiz had a contract with the second fight. There was a lot of U.S. fight fans. I just read some on Twitter a second ago saying, I wanted to see Wilder and Ruiz for all the belts. Now, don't get me wrong. Based off the draw with Wilder and Fury, I still wouldn't have called it a complete lineage because Fury and Wilder would have had to fought at that point. But it still would have been for all the belts, whatever. So I wanted to see that. I would have been happy with that, but I understood that Ruiz had a contract. And I understood Joshua, you know, exercised the rematch clause. Good for him. He outboxed him. Good for him. But whatever excuses, and there were many of them, that Wilder made, it has nothing to do with the contract, though. Now, some people say, well, you know what? Fury's just going to sue him back for slander. Okay. Sure, that could happen. I'm not denying that. That could happen. That definitely could happen. And maybe then it would get real feisty, right? But anyway, like I said, I really want to talk about... But keep unfollowing me, by the way. Keep unfollowing me, please, if you think I'm showing some sort of bias for saying this shit. Because if you're mad right now... I get it, fight fans. I get it. You wanted to see this fight. Just get mad at it. But to sit here and blame Wilder and that's it, he's the one who screwed this up. No, Tyson Fury and Bob Arum, they're the ones who screwed this up. And we're talking about doing good business with PBC and Top Rank and all this shit. A couple of years ago, they had, you know, Al Haymon doesn't exist, boycott Al Haymon, all this shit, all this good business. Right? This is just a bunch of bullshit. Anyway, Figueroa. Wow. We said it. We talked about, you know, taking a flyer out on a certain number. Now, I'll fully admit, I may have won a little change off of Figueroa, but I did pick Neri. I did pick Neri, and this was, you know, I had him up like 3-0 early. It was banging right away. No crazy thoughts there. That fight was banging right away. It seemed like Neri had control of the fight, kind of inside and outside. The left hooks, the body stuff, you know, he was looking pretty good. You saw Figueroa a little wide with his punches. And, you know, at some point, I still thought Neri was, you know, winning the exchanges, but at some point that changed. You did start to see, like, combinations from Neri and like I said, more exchanges. And you know, Figueroa was starting to do stuff, but it just wasn't enough in my mind. But that all changed. In the fourth round, Figueroa early and late started landing his hooks, started landing the better shots. In that fourth round, both of them threw over 100 punches. And once I saw Neri, you know, starting to slow down a little bit, starting to see some signs of on the move too much, backing up, it was like, uh-oh, hold on. hold on. And in the seventh round, Figueroa, several left hooks, by the way. And then a right hook, you know, he had him buzzed with more left hands. He had him buzzed. And you could tell because he actually tried to stall there for a second. Remember that? He's like, no, I got hit in the back. No. The ref said, no, you didn't. Get over here. Left hand to the body, like in a perfect spot right underneath, like the pec. Beautiful shot. Beautiful way to end it. Neri was winning the body battle, too. Body shot battle, I should say. Because we know Figueroa. Well, we're not going to disgrace the sister. But, you know, I'm trying to keep it nice. But, yeah, dude. I mean, these guys were banging it out. It was fun. A lot of punches. But Neri, his face started swelling up. He started slowing down. It was like, wow, you're in retreat mode already? You're not setting traps. You're in retreat mode. And I love it. You know, it's not like Figueroa was a major, major underdog. You know what I mean? He wasn't 5-1 or 7-1 or nothing like that. But he was the clear underdog, I'd say. And he got the job done, dude. It wasn't pretty early, but who cares? You know what I mean? Who cares? He got the job done, and I credit him a lot. I mean, if he can keep making this 122, and even maybe at 126, but his style... It's one of those things, right? Like, two fights ago, that Seha fight, sometimes when you struggle in a fight, it's just you're struggling in that fight and you can learn from it. His style, in the back of my head, I thought, well, is he really going to learn from it? Because this is his style. He's going to bang it out. He's going to get hit a lot. But he's going to, you know, overwhelm the dude and outwork him and just, you know, blast them out. And sometimes you can get stuck on a fight, on a result, where you're just like, I don't know, dude. I just don't know. I don't know, you know? And Neri was known as the power puncher, but that was at 118. That wasn't 122. And that was said, too, last week. Like, hey, he's had some tight fights. He's been stuck in between styles. Maybe Neri, you know, with that great start where it looked like he actually – he kind of buzzed Figueroa early. Maybe that was like, oh, dude, I'm really going to go. I don't know. Either way, though, I made the mistake of thinking, you know, gosh, Brandon looks good. No doubt looks better than his brother. He's a better inside fighter and all that. And obviously he's better outside the ring. He's better in training camp. He doesn't blow up. He's very focused, obviously. And... you know, kudos to him. Now, like I said, I want a little change on him, but still, I didn't pick him, and I'll fully admit that. But Figueroa, job done. We'll talk a little bit about this dynamic, dynamite triple header, damn good triple header that we had. Best card of the year, I'd say, so far. I remember that. There's been a couple of really good cards. The last one we had as far as really good cards was that Top Rank card. So, I mean, this was nice, man. This was nice. Boxing is heating up. The Mexican fighters right now are leading the way at giving us this nice little boost. And what do you know? We got a big fight coming up. Ramirez and Taylor. I'm still on the fence on this one, dude. This is close. And I just looked, or I just saw on Boxing Scene. I think it was on Boxing Scene I saw that they just released who the judges are. Isn't it the exact same judges as the Postal fight? It's in America. It's on the West Coast. You know, how many rounds is Taylor going to have to win? And can he win, like, 8-4? Can he just win 8-4 straight up? He can just do that, no problem? It's fun. This one's fun, man. This one's fun. It's like the come-forward fighter against the outside boxer. But Josh Taylor is not the traditional outside, on-the-move, hands-up. He's just a different style. He's got more ways to win, I believe, and I think he's more talented as far as plan A, plan B, plan C, or whatever, in his versatility, basically. But just stays around so close, considering. Can he, like, for instance, what Zapata did with Ramirez, can he circle and pivot and do that pretty much the whole fight? There's times where, you know, Zapata did go forward and all that, or pop in. In, you know, not in late combinations, not just one punch at a time. But man, it just—he's just got a track record, Taylor, of staying around and brawling, and that's not what you want to do with Ramirez in this fight. So this is a great fight. This is a great fight, and yeah, the lack of buzz on this fight is—it does suck, right? ESPN, I still have yet to see a commercial for it. I finally saw when I was watching, like, the end of SportsCenter, just it was just on, and I saw them show what their Saturday looks like, and it had a picture of the fight and the time. That's all I've seen so far. And I'm talking about on social media, like, other than getting it right for the Top Rank site, you know, but, like, on YouTube. You know, like, when you watch, let's say you're going to watch an interview on YouTube, boom. A lot of times when it's a big fight, you see a commercial for the fight. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm going to watch some NBA, you know, games tonight. So we'll see. I'm assuming they're going to start tonight. I mean, shit, it's Wednesday. But hopefully the saving grace here is they have the PGA broadcasting for like 3 hours. Central time is 9 to 12. And then from 12 to 7, a triple header of NBA playoffs. And I'm assuming they're going to advertise that whole day and then the natural lead into that. Now, obviously, you know, there is a – Brooklyn's playing on ABC at night that starts at 7:30 Central. So if that's a tight game, we're going to have to hope for a blowout by halftime, basically, because that will take a little away from it. But anyway, I want to go ahead and bring in John to talk about a variety of stuff, a great boxing mind, and, you know, is a lawyer too, so that helps. John, what's going on, man? You know, life got in the way for us last night, but we're back, and I think we got a couple of things to talk about. What do you think?
Yeah, great to be here, Chris, and I got to say I'm surprised because, like you, you don't want to get, like you said, you hate to get too caught up in the outside of the ring stuff, though. I got to admit, I always find it interesting. It's part of the wild, wacky entertainment of boxing, but you don't want it to surpass the in the ring stuff. I agree. But the reason I say that is because I got to admit, I'm surprised. I'm looking at the views of my own tweets on the Wilder Fury
right.
subject. I'm amazed. I just, right before we got on, I happened to go through what was trending on Twitter, and I actually chuckled because in the combat worldwide in Twitter, the number one trending term was just Hearn, just his last name, Hearn. And I laughed. I said, "This is crazy." The number one trending
Eddie's loving
term,
it though. Eddie's like,
right.
"Hey, this is cool."
I agree with you. It got me thinking. I don't want to digress too much, but we've talked about this in recent weeks. I've tweeted about it a little bit too. You know, one thing I got to say for Eddie Hearn, I mean, even in the U.S., you know, even though he's a British guy, I'm starting to see an opening for him to be kind of the front man of boxing, love him or hate him, because Bob Arum is 90 years old. You know, we know
right.
Al Haymon with PBC, you know, and that's his right. He doesn't like media attention. You know, he's got a good spokesperson and Tim Smith and some other people, but they're not the guy, you know, like Hearn and Arum is. And, you know, Oscar De La Hoya, of course, is famous in his own right, but it's not being unfair to say Golden Boy is really fading. So, you know, there's just a limit as to what he's going to be able to do there. So, you know, with Eddie Hearn, you know, having Matchroom USA and spending a lot of time in the U.S. now, I mean,
right.
like you said, he's loving it. You know, again, love him or hate him, he may be able to become sort of like the, not in terms of control, but in terms of being the front man. He may
yeah,
become the Dana White of boxing, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. Dana White sold
his interest, interview.
You know?
He's a great interview.
He's a great interview.
He'll say whatever the hell comes to mind. he lets you in on a lot of information that none of these other dudes really do. And like you said, love him or hate him, he's good at what he does, promoting.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying.
Great.
And why I
great.
Think this,
it's
going to get into what we're talking about, but, you know, it's controversial, but I think it's the way it played out. As you said, we've been saying this beforehand. I mean, I've been consistent. You know, you can look at my tweets. You can listen to our shows here. And I just don't think – and, you know, Chris, you know I've been saying this for a while. I mean, people want to disagree, but I still believe it even more today than I ever have. I just don't think these parties wanted that Joshua Fury fight. Just for their own reasons. I don't think the fighters are afraid. I don't mean it anything like that. I don't think there's any fear of any of the fighters, you know, Wild, Fury, Joshua. They'll do what they have to do and get paid well for it when they got to, you know, step in there and put their health on the line. I don't think these guys got where they are being afraid. But you know, they do trust their promoters to take care of their interests. And I just think it was a case of, you know, ESPN and Arum started, and Frank Warren, you know, offered up Fury and got him involved in that. They had a lot of investment in Fury becoming a U.S. presence. So, you know, from their end,
right.
I saw that. From Hearn's end, you know, look, a lot of people are misinterpreting things I was saying and tweeting. You know, arguably, it's not a certainty, but you can make an argument, and I certainly understand the argument, and I think it could very well be true, that in terms of resume depth, Joshua has the best depth in the heavyweight division. But with that understood, you know, Hearn was traumatized by that Ruiz knockout of Joshua. I mean, did you see him where Joshua won that decision then in Saudi
yeah,
Arabia
yeah.
and the mandatory rematch?
Yeah.
I mean, I think, I don't want to say he was about to cry. He looked like he just about was crying. I mean, he was so happy and relieved. And I'm just thinking, again, this is all marketing and things like that, not about really, you know, the fighter's fear. But I thought, you know, is Hearn going to throw Joshua in as an underdog to Fury with all the investment he's got in Joshua in the UK and with DAZN? And just even though Joshua
– in the last fight, too. Last fight on the contract right now, too.
Yeah, I know Joshua has that deal in the U.S. where he can fight off of DAZN. That's the kind of the lesser-known part of the deal, but it does exist. You've always heard it, and I think that exists. But, again, the investment, I mean, we've said it a million times. You know, DAZN owns 40% of Matchroom USA. I mean, even if Hearn could have Joshua in the U.S. only fight off of DAZN, I mean, there's just too much investment there to me. So there are reasons for all this. I didn't see it making sense for them, and I think as you laid out, I think for Deontay Wilder and again another guy, I don't know why people be loving him now, but even if people hate him, like when Sergey Kovalev got knocked out by Alvarez and he had a rematch, you know, Elidier Alvarez, and he had a rematch clause and he had to exercise it by a certain time, not long after the fight. Tough call, but I think, you know, obviously he made the right call, and I said it at the time. I think he might be able to turn this around. He did. That's what Wilder was in with this one. In other words, you know, he elected that rematch clause. You know, him and his team, they had to make that decision early on after a pretty brutal knockout loss to Fury in the rematch, but they made that call. So, like you said, the pandemic, you know, getting in the way, which it did, Wilder had already made that call. And that was in his best interest, even if he's going to go in as an underdog. But it was in his best interest. So just saying for the players, it seemed like where they wanted to go would to me, there was an arbitration clause, obviously, which Wilder won. But it seemed like Wilder Fury 3, some fans like it or not, was the way they were going to go. I don't think, despite the smokescreen, Hearn wanted Joshua Fury at this time. I just don't. I mean, people get mad when you say it, but I just don't think it. And I said it beforehand, so I don't think it was going to happen. Now I don't think it was as close as people think. It was just a smoke screen or a sand screen, if you want to say that, for Saudi Arabia. So that's kind of what I think about the out of the ring stuff where we are right now.
Yeah, it's so funny how all of a sudden people are shocked that this was possible. Like they just didn't even think that this was even, like, what? That's still a thing? It's like, well, yeah, as long as it hasn't been decided, it's still a thing. You know, it's not going anywhere.
No, well, what you said, I mean, and you got to say it, there was just all, I mean, unless you got to say it, because it is being fair, it's not being unfair, and it's what's good that we're independent. That's why I really like my place in the boxing world, because I can say what I can, and you can too. We can say what we want to. I mean, we're not, people can claim you have some bias or they don't like what you say, but we're not tied, you know, to any promotion or getting payouts on that where we have to say something for somebody. I mean, we can say what we want to. So just saying, there was awful media reporting on this that was building that smokescreen. I don't think it was in good faith. I mean, it just was. You know, these people don't care. There's journalistic ethics are out the window. They think it's about me making some cash. It's hard to make cash in the boxing world unless you're the very top of the food chain as a fighter, which is very few people. So, you know, you got writers and people thinking, hey, I just want to pick up a couple of bucks here, and so what? I got to take care of myself. But just saying anything, I mean, that fits a narrative or a smokescreen. And it was bad, so I'll give the fans that. I mean, if they were trusting some of these people, and you know, you've been alluding to that even more than me, Chris, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I can say as a lawyer, I mean, this was just bad reporting, because once I saw credible reports early on that there was an arbitration clause, I know how difficult they are to deal with in the U.S. when you got to try to beat. Well, first of all, they couldn't beat; they had to arbitrate. I mean, the Arum side is in arbitration. See, sometimes if you don't want that, you used to even try to say, well, the arbitration clause, it gets complicated, but that the clause itself isn't valid and we don't have to arbitrate this issue. I noticed that Arum side apparently wasn't even saying that. So they knew they entered into an arbitration clause. And this is where I can help, you know, the non-lawyers out there or people that don't follow it as closely. The arbitration clause is part of the contract where there's a dispute in the contract, and that's how it's going to be decided instead of going into regular civil court. So that's what just happened. And I'm a civil litigator. Civil litigators don't like arbitration clauses. We have to then handle them a lot of times nowadays because they've gotten more and more popular, but that's where you don't get to go to court on that issue. So the issue whether the contract was binding or not had to go to arbitration. It couldn't go into the civil court. It actually can't. So this is complicated even for the lawyers. So we just had arbitration because that couldn't go in the civil court to be decided. And the arbitrator, a former judge, this is all technically private now. Though he gets hired by the parties to make the independent decision. He ruled for Wilder. Now, what you said, Chris, is correct. Well, you got a picture now just as a non-lawyer. That was just basically an arbitration provision in the contract to determine if the contract was still valid and enforceable for a third fight. It was determined that it was. So you're right. If somebody were now to violate that, it would be like violating a contract, okay? So that could possibly be, you know, if you wanted that enforced, that's where then a court could come in like they were enforcing enforcing the contract. Sometimes it can even get wild and wacky in a bad way, because I don't even like this as a lawyer, where it could have to, like, go to arbitration again, not on the same issue, but on, like, other issues in the contract. So, but this contract, the way you can take it right now with what just happened in arbitration is the contract providing for a third fight between Wilder and Fury is valid, and the judge said make it happen by September 15th. The arbitrator, the former judge, I should say, it's an arbitrator who's a former federal
judge. Who's a legit former judge, too, because he's been used multiple times. It's not some random thing. Arum spoke highly of him and has in the past as well, and he's even got that Golden Boy top rank thing where Golden Boy ended up getting 5% of Pacquiao's stuff because, you know, he signed both contracts, or he had already signed, and then he signed with Golden Boy. And that was why that fight with Pacquiao and Floyd was never truly 50-50. before the split of Golden Boy and all that, you know, because there was always a 5% in there that a lot of people weren't talking about that then. But so just kind of thinking out loud, you know, with the law stuff. So let's say, because already people are like, screw it, dude, he could just fight Joshua and then retire, or he could just retire straight up. Now, like we said, this is a decision, and now he's armed with at least some evidence of a contract, and if he didn't fight him by September 15th, then there could be a possible lawsuit. Is that potential, or how does this all work out as far as how could Fury get out of this without having to owe money? Or is that even possible?
I don't think he could get out of it without having to owe money. That's what gives people a headache, but that's where he's at now. I mean, there's no damages at the moment, but I don't think he can
right.
get I don't think he can get out of the third fight really without having to owe money. Now, let's look though, all reports and I think they were valid. And you know, there really wasn't enough talked about, and this is the thing, some of these things are confidential. I mean, we know he had a rematch clause with Vladimir Klitschko for a second fight that
right.
was set, and basically, you know, claimed mental health later on. I'm not going to say exactly what was going on with him, but for whatever reason, he bailed out of the second fight, and it never happened, and both guys went on to fight again. So, you know, I mean, Fury obviously violated that rematch clause. Now he also offended by the UK doping authority during that time frame. You know, we're kind of forgetting
right,
that he had that.
Right, for the cocaine.
yeah, for whatever he did there that was in his system. So he was also, you know, fighting that because, you know, they had him and he was going to be hitting suspension. So he was also out, you know, for that at the same time. So, you know, he was going to face a ban. You know, this is where no matter how good a lawyer you are, when you're not, and it doesn't mean you're going to be wrong a lot of times on what you're speculating or you're making your educated judgments on what you do know. But, you know, it's hard without looking at
mm-hmm.
all the provisions of the contract. You know, I'm not looking at the, and we would have been going all the way back to what the contract said for Fury Klitschko won because there was a rematch clause in it, but everything that was in that contract.
But in a different country, would that have much to do with it, or is there international law when it comes to this?
A lot of times in contract, because this is kind of unique to contract law, a lot of times these contracts will, as part of the contract, say that the contract is going to be decided under the law of so-and-so. So, again, and I don't know. You know, I don't know if that contract with Fury and Klitschko said it's going to be decided under the laws of Germany or it's going to be decided under the laws of the United Kingdom.
Right.
But sometimes you'll have them, it depends on who's involved, you know, that it might say something like it'll be decided under the laws of California and the United States of America. You know, now we know with the, you know, Fury and Warren brought in Arum and Top Rank to handle their U.S. business. So, and then, you know, we know Wilder's been with PBC. I got to think that's all. Look, you just had Weinstein as an arbitrator. I'm sure, you know, we can assume that was U.S. law. It would have said under a certain state in the U.S. the way usually the American contracts are going to go. So, you know what, some of the people in different countries are even speculating, and you know it is an interesting question. Like, you know, could Fury just then, you know, fight over in Saudi Arabia and see what's going to happen? This is where I got to speculate a little bit, but I think
sure.
I can speculate pretty educatedly on that. Look, you know, you already know that you know Arum and Top Rank are involved, which and they have an ESPN deal. You know, which is Disney. They've already made a lot of U.S. commitments. I mean,
they got to do business here.
Right, they got to do business here. You got to figure that one way or another if somebody tried to pull something like that. And, you know, I'll defer somewhat to a contract specialist here, but usually you end up being right on these types of issues because, I'm in litigation and I got to deal with arbitration clauses a lot. you know, settlement agreements, things like that. I think that you're a lawyer on the Wilder side, and they've obviously already done a good job. They're going to be able to. There's going to be somebody that's going to be able to be targeted that was involved in that deal on Fury's side in the U.S. And you know, ESPN was already involved in the pay-per-view of the first fight. You know, it was a joint pay-per-view situation, and you know, Fox involved. I think it would get tied up. Now, this is where you get into what you've been seeing sometimes guys do in different situations in this. But again, Fury did it once. People that are speculating that are not wrong. I mean, you know, we've seen it from Fury once. We saw, you know, again, on a promotional deal, you saw Mikey Garcia sit out for a long period of time. I mean,
yep.
You know, you can't really make Fury. I mean, if he just says, I'm not going to get into a ring, I mean,
right.
You know, for a few years, you can't really make the guy do it. I mean, you know, you can't make, no lawyer can, you know, make him fight. You know, there can be damages he could potentially be susceptible to. But if he just says, you know, like, in other words, if he tried to fight somebody else in the U.S., you know, you could get hit with an injunction and things like that. I mean, but if he just says, I'm just not going to fight, or, you know, I'm going to be a pro wrestler or something like that. I mean, you've seen crazy stuff like that. I mean, I don't know if you can – I'm not sure, you know, you can stop him from just – you know, you can't make him fight. But, you know, is he going to – like this fantasy – that he's just going to go ahead and fight Joshua anyway, and they're going to take the consequences. I don't see that happening. He's with Aram and Top Rank in the U.S. They got a lot of investment in him, and like I said, I'll still stick by it. I don't think Hearn is looking for Joshua Fury right now. I just don't. I think he's traumatized a bit by that Joshua loss to Ruiz. He was happy to get those. He cares about those alphabet belts, and a lot of fans do. I don't get it. And I'll even apply that just so I'm consistent. And I've said it before, but just so people don't have any confusion, I feel the same with Wilder with his WBC belt thing and Fury. You know, to me, Fury's the lineal champ now. He's recognized by Transnational, the ring. I mean, you know, you could say Joshua is the number one contender. I agree with that right now. And Wilder's the number two, which, of course, is not bad at all. So to me, the way I analyze it, it's the champ's going to take on the number two contender instead of the number one contender. You know, we'd like to see him fight the number one contender, but, you know, it's not that bad him fighting the number two contender again. But, you know, this belt stuff, I think, but, you know, why I brought it up was, you know, Hearn cares about those belts, you know, and PBC got to care about Wilder with that WBC belt. I wish it wasn't so, but it is. So, I defer to Steven Espinosa, who has those real moments of candor, even though he's in the business directly and he's dealt directly with these players. But he says, you know, these are just marketing tools. You know, they're meaningless, but they're marketing tools. And I see that all over the place now. I do find that really frustrating. Well, again, why I'm saying all this, I think Hearn looks at those three belts with Joshua as a big marketing tool. He's run with that hard in Joshua's career.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
they've been talking IBO. They even talk about IBO, John.
Exactly. He likes to run that. I think to him, this is just the way I think Eddie Hearn looks at it. He looks at it like with the money Joshua's bringing in, that him defending those three alphabet belts in the UK a few more times. Again, he took them there for the Ruiz rematch, got to be fair to Hearn. And I'm sure it's for a lot of money. And he's dealt with them, so I don't doubt that there are big Saudi site fees out there. I think that that's true, but I think he'd rather do that with Joshua, you know, maybe mixed in with some UK fights, you know, pandemic over, you know, big selling, maybe stadium fights. I don't know who he's looking at to sell. I think a couple of years ago, I think he did want it to be Usyk. And I think Joshua can beat Usyk, but I just don't know right now if that's a risk Hearn wants to take. And that's what I'm kind of watching careful. If I had to make a bet, I'd say he doesn't want to take that one at the moment. And that's why he talked about his plan C, and I put that on Twitter, and it got a lot of response, but some people got mad. But that's Eddie Hearn's words, not me. He said, you know, he said Fury's A, Usyk's B, and we've got two or three that are plan C. And I thought, I'm betting on C. I'm betting on C, and I want to see who those chumps are. Let's face it.
It's true, though, because like you said, and it's funny that people take it the wrong way when you're just – the only reason why you brought it up is because the guy said it.
He said it.
Just like Fury.
The guy said it.
Just like Fury saying, I should have fought Wilder. He said that a week ago. He said it, not me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and he is correct. That's why he admitted it. Because he's like, yeah, dude, I fucked this up, you know?
Yeah, and then people said, I tweeted out, they said, you're attacking Joshua's resume. I'm putting out there what Eddie Hearn said. I mean,
right.
And then they said, well, I said he may be starting a softy run, and I said that Polov was the start of that, and I'm not backing off of that one. Don't tell me because he was the IBF mandatory, you know, the second time he was a quote-unquote mandatory, which is laughable if you looked at him fighting Klitschko and Joshua. I mean, the dude was on the canvas going up and down like a rubber ball in those two fights.
Right.
And he probably didn't land 10 good punches in the two fights combined. I mean, you know, come on, people. I mean, you know, come on. Did you see the guy fight Dinu?
Right, yeah, right, yeah. Yep. I'll say this. Eddie Hearn would much rather Joshua lose to Fury for a bunch more money than lose to Usyk for a bunch less money. You know what I mean? Like, if we're going to break it down that way.
I think there's a point. I mean, you know, I do think Eddie Hearn, there's a point where he'll do it with a guy. I mean, I don't think he's one of those guys that wants to go on forever. And then it's hard to judge in his plan. I agree with you. I mean, like, in other words, I don't think it would be forever if Joshua and Fury kept winning that Hearn would say, my guy's not going to fight him. But I think it's a timing issue. And you know.
And you got to recoup. You got to recoup your company. I mean, a lot of these
right.
guys have been losing money.
Right. You know, he was traumatized by the Ruiz upset. He was really happy that Joshua got those alphabet belts back. You know, he knows what he's doing. I mean, come on. It was Usyk was an alphabet mandatory and Polov was. I mean, don't tell me that's because the IBF said it had to be that way, that's why it was Polov. It was because Polov was an easy blowout and Usyk presents more risk.
Right.
So I think some people overrate Usyk, but there's no disputing he's, you know, I'll be the first to say.
Right.
He's much more of a risk than Kubrat Pulev. I mean, it's not even close. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, Eddie Hearn, you know, that's the kind of thing to me he's looking at. And I'm not saying it's impossible to have him go to Usyk next, but I think if he wanted that plan, that would have already been where he would have been headed. I think there's some no-hopers that he thinks maybe he can market. I mean, the guy's good at promoting that we're going to see. And I'm not saying Joshua doesn't have a good overall resume. He does. People take it the wrong way, but this is boxing. And I just think before there's going to be a Fury risk if that ever happens, you know, or if Wilder pulls the upset, you know, that doesn't mean he's going to fight Wilder next necessarily either. I'm not saying it's going to be forever, but I think there'll be a couple more W's for Joshua in there that Hearn feels more than comfortable he can get. Now, I'm myself trying to figure out who they are. I'm curious. I'm thinking, where would he go? I haven't come up with that conclusion yet, but I think they're his plan C. He said it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I guess maybe a rematch with Dillian White that is true. I mean, Joe Joyce, I guess. I mean, I don't know, but yeah, that's a good point. And we'll see. We'll find out. That's for sure. But yeah, there is something to be said about the amount of money that all these guys have lost in this time frame. And, you know, to recoup plus, he did all this leg work, whether they were close to signing or not, he was doing leg work. So, you know, Anthony could look at him and be like, hey, my guy tried. You know, my guy tried. I tried my best. We were right at the doorstep, supposedly. It could be a long-ass, you know, like, whatever, path to the actual house of the doorway, but we were right there. And, you know, whatever that actually was, and like you said, there is money obviously over there because They did get it for, you know, whatever the amount was. They did get it for the rematch with Joshua and Ruiz. So I do believe that part. But I think he did his due diligence that way. And maybe that's why he was so irritationally, you know, putting out all these damn updates. It's like, dude, shut up. And that's what it kind of made me think. How many times are you going to say, you know, 2 weeks or whatever? Any final thoughts on this before we get back into the ring?
Yeah, there's one, because one came up that's funny, but it does prove the point, I think. Remember, it's comical when you watch the guy fight, but it all fits exactly what we're talking about before we go into the ring. He was doing it with the Zhang guy. He signed the Zhang guy. He was starting to promote him as a Joshua opponent, and then the guy got battered around by Jerry Forrest, of all people, and he apparently was hospitalized after the fight. But he was going with the Zhang thing. I mean, so there was one of your plan Cs right there. I mean, remember, this was relatively recently. This was not something years ago. I mean, this was going right into Zhang and Forrest, and then Zhang got battered around. I mean, everybody figured he could handle Forrest pretty easily, at least most, and he had him dropped, let's face it. You got to say that for Zhang. He battered him all over the place, had him drop, three times early, but then he gassed out and he had nothing left to go the rest of the way. Somehow he made it, but he ended up getting battered right at the final bell. You know, I still don't think Forrest is particularly good, frankly, but, you know, that kind of derailed the Joshua Zhang thing, but Hearn had it teed up. Hearn had that teed up. So, you know, he's looking for some, I think he's looking for a couple of easy opponents he feels he can market for Joshua and sell it enough. And I think what you said is exactly what it was about, that he's smart. He knows to do that there had to at least be a perception that he wanted that in the UK, I think, and he knows the UK market better than I do, that he wanted, you know, they wanted Fury right now, and they just couldn't get him.
And especially with, and I'm not, when I say, just to the fans that are going to listen, UK fans, I should say, I'm not, like, when I say one contract left, that's literally out of, once again, Eddie's mouth, that this is known. I'm not saying he can't extend them or he won't stay with them. I mean, I guess you could get a little nervous when Joshua, after his fight with Pulev, John, jumps out of the ring and go hugs Floyd Mayweather. I guess you could maybe read some tea leaves there, but it doesn't. My point is, it is just one fight left right now. So he really, just in case, just to cover his ass, maybe he did want to try to, you know, make as much money as he could right now, just in case. But that's all just speculation, and I actually do see him signing back with Matchroom. There's just so much money behind it. It'll be interesting on that DAZN platform, though, that Eddie's going to go to in the UK. And they, you know, they obviously have more of a budget than Sky does, because we've seen their Sky regular product over there that UK fight fans have been complaining about for quite some time. Most of their fights are on, you know, pay-per-view. So, you know, they've been, you know, it is what it is. But anyway, let's get back in the ring. That triple header last week, John, was damn good. I'd say it's probably the fight card, the triple header of the year thus far. We'll start at the top with Figueroa getting the job done. We'll talk a little Xavier Martinez and Juan Carlos Burgos. We'll talk about the beautiful performance by Danny Roman. But Figueroa got the job done. It didn't look good in those opening rounds, especially when it looked like he got buzzed, but then he became the buzzsaw.
Yeah, I mean, I was always a believer in Figueroa. You know, then again, as you know, full disclosure, like you said, I'm not running away from it, you know, but Nery's power punching always impressed me, except for his fight before the Figueroa fight. I personally, even though everybody looks at that quickly, I don't think the 4 pounds, 118 to 122, to me, that's a half a weight class when you look at traditional weight classes. And to me, those really don't make any difference. So I just think it was Figueroa you know, at his size, 5'9", and you know, what made me believe in him, but where I thought he was going to have a problem in this fight was I thought with that Mary power in the early rounds that he was going to take too many power shots from Mary, get hurt or busted up. Like you said, he got buzzed a little bit one time, but not real badly, and that was it. And that's where the fight to me was not playing out like I thought, because as we said about a flyer, and I did say it, I did think there was a scenario Figueroa could back him up and win this fight, and it ended up happening. But why I thought it wouldn't happen was I thought in that early three or four rounds when Neri was unloading power shots that he was going to hurt or bust up Figueroa, and it was going to be a little too much for Figueroa to keep backing him up. He was going to be taking too many shots, but he was able to withstand those shots, brush them off, and I saw the same thing you did. You know, a lot of people were talking about Neri's boxing skills. Those didn't impress me before the fight. I just look at him as a good power puncher. And when I saw him start to try to move and box Figueroa, I said, this guy's in trouble. I mean, he is getting steamrolled by Figueroa. And then when he just started backing up and Figueroa was pushing him back, I thought, yeah, this thing's over. But that was during the fight. That wasn't before the fight. So I thought, you know, tremendous performance by Figueroa. You know, one thing he did do a little bit in the first round or two, Chris, that you and I speculated about, and we were kind of right. We said talent and the length to box a bit, but he never wanted to do that in his career. And he did it just for a few moments in the first round or two. And as we said, you know, he can't learn that just for this fight. He didn't look all that great doing it, and he abandoned it. But you did see a moment or two in the first round or two where he thought about using his height and jab a little bit, but he just said, forget that. I'm going to just go do what I always do. And it was more than enough because he got a knockout too, which that was extremely impressive. You know, his power looked real good. I think the performance was impressive enough. I'm not going to get real down on Mary like some people. I mean, like you said, he just ran into a buzzsaw in Figueroa. Even though I don't think I can rank him that way, because the Akhmadaliev and Roman fight was so close. They both performed well, and then Akhmadaliev got a close decision, which I thought that one could have gone either way. And then Roman, as you mentioned, did just pick up a nice win over the weekend. You really can't rank Figueroa ahead of those two guys, but I think after this fight last Saturday, for me, I think he's probably, I'll go as far as, I think he's probably the best guy in the 122-pound division right now. I think I am going to go that far. He's young. He's got power. You know, he's got some skills, even though he chooses to come forward and lean on his opponent and brawl. He just took Mary out with one good body shot. You know, he's got a high KO percentage. He showed a great chin in this fight. Let's face it. You know, he just backed a power puncher up, which is, you got to have a chin to do that. And
early too. It wasn't like, you know, the last couple rounds.
Exactly. So probably going to be, you know, cause he's still young. I mean, he does take shots, but he's not at that point in his career, even the lower weights, where that wear and tear and you age quicker, the lower weights is going to get to him. And like you said, he might not have to worry about that in the sense that he's got the frame. He could move up a lot of weights, and then that won't be quite as much of a factor. So, yeah, I think he's – I like Fulton a real lot. I think that's going to be a hell of a fight. I think those might really be the top two guys in the division right now, even though you probably got to rank them three and four, just based on what they've done so far. But I think they might really be one or two, so that's a heck of a fight in September. I don't have any problem saying the winner of that fight's the number one guy in the division. I think most reasonable boxing fans will probably come to that conclusion. So I don't think it's long that they're going to be the number one guy. I think the winner of that fight bypasses Roman and Akhmadaliev. But great performance by Brandon Figueroa. Nothing really to criticize at all there. Kind of a star is born. I just think on the kind of out of the ring part that hurts, great card, like you said, but, you know, lighter weight guys starting, I mean, the first fight started at 10 on the East Coast. And you know, you looked at the Showtime numbers. You know, you don't want to take away from a great card, but it is kind of a shame. It's just that you're just losing too much of the country. I mean, when Figueroa's fights start like after midnight on the East Coast, you know, you're still in with your West Coast viewers, and that's probably the target for that card. But still, just losing too many viewers, and that part I do think is a shame.
Yeah, and the crazy part is that's like one of the better ratings they've done too.
yeah,
you know, since the pandemic. So that kind of tells you right there in general. I mean, you know, obviously we don't have the streaming numbers, but still, even if it was 50,000 extra, or even if it was 100,000, it still wouldn't be any kind of, you know, major rating or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, what MJ, like, how long does Zone hangs on to MJ? You know, how long do they just finally got him back. He was off for a long time, got him back, and it's like he's got two belts. He's got a very tight win over Roman, but pretty much the rest of the 122 division is with the PBC. So you wonder if it won't be like Roman or whatever, where the contract's up, like, how many more fights does he even have on the contract, the original contract? It'll be really interesting to see, you know, just because he does have the two belts, and that does give him, you know, some form of leverage, either him or Hearn or whatever. So, yeah, we'll see. Speaking of, though, that tight fight with Roman, did you think MJ won that fight with Roman? I did. I think he stuck it out, but it was a damn tight fight. But he looked damn good. In a tougher than some folks expected as far as a good fight, especially in the first chunk of the fight. But Roman looked really, really good. It was one of his best performances, I thought, as far as complete performance.
Yeah, when he fought Akhmadaliyev, I actually did think Roman edged it, but I didn't have any problem with the decision for Akhmadaliyev. Like you said, I thought that Akhmadaliyev started extremely strong, but then, you know, Roman got into his game and he really came on the second half of the fight. That is one that I wouldn't mind seeing a rematch. Again, all the networks do this. I'm not just saying, you know, DAZN, but that is the problem with the alphabet belt thing. I wish PBC would have stuck with what they started out with in their time by days and when they even were first. Well, Matt, it was really, you got to go back to the time by days, but when they were ignoring the alphabets initially, because now what they're all competing with, it's just like, you know, have your guy, you know, they seem to feel that if they've got a guy that's got some kind of alphabet belt, I mean, we're even down to where it's WBA regular, or now you've got DAZN talking about the IBO, you know, if the guy,
yeah, unifications
kind
of secondary belts.
Right. I mean, it's like if they feel like now if their guy in a division just has any kind of belt, that then he can just defend that belt. And a lot of times they're even getting, you know, inexpensive opponents, sometimes maybe out of the promotion even, or lesser guys within their own promotion. And that's the part of boxing going on I really don't like, is that, you know, I just wish fans would just start ignoring these belts, because – you know, if you forget about the belt itself, then you could say, like, well, you know, again, like, kind of like I said, you know, maybe you have Akhmadaliyev ranked number one right now, but you're looking at the fact that he's not a champion. And then when Fulton and Figueroa, maybe you're not looking at them as the champ yet either, but they fight each other. And then a reasonable fan starts saying, well, Akhmadaliyev's not the number one guy anymore. You know, I'm not that interested in seeing him, you know, fight guys that he's superior to on DAZN. I want to see him, you know, fight Figueroa or Fulton or Roman again or something like that. But with the belts, it's always that you got fans that are too easily fooled, where they start saying, oh, he just made another defense, or he fought his mandatory. And that's the kind of nonsense that I think the fans got to get a little bit wiser about. I mean, it's sport. You follow it how you want to, but for God's sakes, I mean, anybody with a brain cell knows the alphabets do all kinds of crazy, illegitimate things. So, well, why are you taking what they say seriously, or you know, what their belts are?
Yeah, very true. Very, very true. And, it, you know, now Roman is going to, you know, he's going to have kind of the second wind of his career here because he's got so many fights to fight. You wonder if they're going to start steering him to Aleem, you know, because obviously this
that
fight
would
has
be an
to
excellent
happen.
Fight. That's a good suggestion because it could be easily made and it's a great fight. I'd love to see that. I mean, PBC could do a heck of a little informal tournament. You have Fulton fight Figueroa, and then you have Aleem fight Roman and have the winners of that fight. That's all you need. You don't even need these eight man. You know, that's another thing. If you're going to have a little formal or informal tournament, you don't need these eight-man things where you start getting no hope involved. I mean, take four tough guys, and, you know, it doesn't have to drag out. You know, they fight, and then the winners fight, and you've got some damn good fight. You know, damn good fights.
Because like you said, a lot of times the eight-man, the first round is just like to get everybody on schedule, and then they go. But the cool thing about this is they are represented by the same person. So if someone gets hurt, they're not like trying to rush them back because we got to keep this tournament going because we did see that with Groves and all that. You know, so it's a little bit smarter. And you could put in a quality opponent there too instead of having to go through all the political stuff. Funny thing is, before we talk about Xavier Martinez, I just saw some news across Twitter here, John. Jake Paul has a new promotional home. The YouTube-turned-boxing star has a deal in place for his next bout with Showtime Sports.
You know, that's huge. That's huge. I mean, with the buzz he's getting, I mean, people don't want to hear it, but I was saying it about Jake Paul before this, just, you know, I've made my opinions known on this, Chris. I'm not like some old, like, turn your nose up at these things. I think whatever brings publicity to boxing is good. I even said it when Hearn put the YouTubers on. You know, when he put Logan Paul on with the KSI or whatever. I mean, I said, what the heck? Yeah. I mean, you know, if it's going to bring more viewers into boxing, I thought he should have been more creative with his undercard, but, I know some boxing people who are honest were saying too that was a reasonably entertaining fight. You know, so that's huge. I mean, the way Jake Paul's going, I think that's an ingenious move. And you know, with how well he's doing, that must have cost him some money.
An investment for sure.
I like it. I think it's interesting. I mean, look, people are going to watch it. I think they will. They're smart enough to. I hope Showtime, believe it or not, I'll say for Jake Paul, I hope Showtime keeps getting them good exposure, you know. However, because, you know, they have CBS ties too. However they decide to play it, you know, I mean, if he's on a pay-per-view, I hope it's an entertaining pay-per-view so we don't have to feel like, you know, we're just paying for his fight alone, even though you know, it depends who he fights too. But and make them real fights. The one thing you and I haven't discussed it, but I don't care for, like, the Logan Paul, Floyd Mayweather's an exhibition.
Yeah.
I don't like the exhibition thing. I mean, if it's a real fight and it's quirky, a lot of times I'll still watch it. I mean, I won't be embarrassed or try to be hipster. I'll say, no, I'm watching that. I don't care. That's entertaining. Sure. But the exhibition thing, for me personally.
Exhibition on pay-per-view, I'm not a fan of. I'm just not a fan of it.
That doesn't do it. So I'm saying, like, I know people are going to laugh, well, what are you talking about, real fights? But, like, as long as Jake Paul is not fighting in exhibitions, I got to say, at this point, I think I'm probably going to be watching it. And, you know, that's a good move for Showtime. But let's keep it away from the – let's keep it away from the exhibition thing.
Yeah,
but that's
exactly.
Huge. I think it's huge. That's
funny.
And it's huge. I mean –
and if we listen to a couple of key, you know – power hitters, Showtime was out of business. They were going out of business, John. They're done with boxing. It doesn't seem like that's the case.
Martinez. That's huge.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, I mean, hey, if it keeps boxing ranked fourth in Generation Z, sign me up for that. That's fine, you know. We don't have, the thing is, no one has a gun to our head saying, you got to buy this thing. Push the button or die, Chris. I don't want to push the button. Okay, no, I'm still here. I'm still breathing. I'm good. You know, you don't have to buy this stuff.
And people are
but you
be
can't
mad,
deny
but
what it can happen.
No, and you got to be fair too. Like people get mad, but there is truth to this. I mean, and you might even know more about this than me. And I know it's not their regular trainers, but I mean, the Pauls have trained with Mayweather, correct? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so like here's Floyd Mayweather kind of being involved in linked with Showtime in a good business decision again. I mean, you know, he didn't turn his nose up at these guys, and you know, people were working with him, and you know, Jake Paul's been training with BJ Flores, and you know, I mean, it was a smart. These guys had some business vision there.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I'll give them credit for working. They're in the gym. They're working. And I've always said it, I'd rather them strap on boxing gloves and so young people know more than just a highlight of Tyson what boxing is. And that's the thing. And I think we've talked about this before. When they – let's say they fall in love with a fighter, right? When they see – what a real, like, quote-unquote, real fight is, professional, high level, they're going to be like, oh, my God, this is way better, you know, way better than that stuff. Oh, my God, this is, you know, they're going to be, this is intense to them, you know, even more intense than we're used to it. So it is what it is. Like I said, I've never been the one to hate guys. I've also not been the one to push anybody to buy any of it. Xavier Martinez did get a win over Juan Carlos Burgos, who really showed a lot to me that he had something in the tank in this fight. Was it that, or is Xavier Martinez, are we starting to see the ceiling with him? This was a bang-it-out fight right here.
Yeah, even though it's a tough veteran, I think this is, for me, this is the second fight in a row with Martinez. You know, at Marrero, it's kind of the same thing. I just think his upside limited, you know. Even before that, he wasn't one of the guys that stood out to me. I mean, he's not bad. You know, he's not one of these guys I'm looking at. You know, every once in a while you'll get a guy that they're building up, and I'm like, this guy can't fight. It's not like that to me with Xavier Martinez. He is young. You know, he has some skills, but just not. I mean, to me, you know, when you would be talking about like a top prospect, you know, seeing him multiple times, he's just not, to me, a top prospect. I just don't see it. So I think there is some of that there. People are saying, you know, Burgos came in. Yeah, he came to fight and everything, but a lot of that's Martinez. He's just not one of my top prospects. I think the best, it'd be fairest to put it that way. And I think, you know, when he, and you know, there's, let's face it, there's a lot of talent collecting around 130 pounds, 135 pounds. When you think about that, you know, I Xavier Martinez is going to have problems before long.
Yeah, I agree. It was a fun fight to watch, but, you know, he should be, like I said, at times this thing was a firefight, but, and they threw, you know, a bunch of punches, landed a bunch of punches. I did have Martinez winning 6-4, but, yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of time before someone gets to him. But, you know, I mean, it was a good bout to open up the card with, I'll say that. You know, it's like, all right, you know, if you are watching it, you're going to be like, whoa, what's this all about? Hold on, this is going to be fun. But, yeah, I agree with you. It's not you know, a high-level guy there, but who knows? You never know. I mean, maybe he'll pull up an upset or whatever, but he'd have to really do it probably with his power, and he does seem kind of limited for that top level. Okay, so we got a big fight coming up this weekend. I'm really hoping that the all-day sports marathon between the PGA and a triple header of NBA playoffs are going to help promote this fight on Saturday. The problem is the Brooklyn Nets are playing on ABC right when this card starts. So let's hope for a blowout at halftime where whoever. Well, actually Brooklyn, because if Brooklyn's down, people will still watch them get their ass kicked. Whereas if they're winning by 25, maybe they'll turn back. So let's hope that actually is the case. You're seeing Kriegel and a lot of ESPN folks saying, oh, if you want to see a real fight and not this, you know, this exhibition stuff, it's just like, wow, that's the way you're going to choose to talk about this great fight. I mean, last couple of weeks we've gotten real fights. I mean, you know, I don't give two shits about the exhibitions either, but it's just funny how they are promoting that. But yet I have yet to see a damn commercial for the actual fight. I assume on Saturday they're going to be running them all day. But Jose Ramirez versus Josh Taylor, come forward fighter against, you know, against the boxer. I was saying earlier in the show that, you know, as much as Josh Taylor has more versatility, you know, will he use it? Will he, if you look at that Zapata fight, I watched it last night again, and I'm just not sold 100%, John, that he's going to be on the move, circling, pivoting, throwing combinations instead of one big punch. I just don't, that's not really Taylor's style. Like I said, I definitely think he's got more ways to win. It does thing, it's like Ramirez, once in a while Ramirez will like reset or whatever, and he does have a really good jab. It's powerful, but he's coming at you. That's what he wants. But Taylor, so many times, and he hasn't had a ton of fights, but so many times, especially of late, he's either right in front of someone. He's usually, he's got good head movement, but he still gets hit flush, so I'm not going to call this guy an outside boxer at the highest level of that type of skill defensively. He just loves to have a tear-up so many times, and that's what Ramirez wants you to do. And they got the, you know, I actually thought he beat Paul Stahl, Ramirez. Some people didn't. The one that's up in the air for me, and I had a draw, was that the fight I just spoke of, you know, the Zapata fight. That was, I just watched that again. It was like, whoa, okay, that I you know, it's been a little while since I watched the fight, so I was like kind of reminding myself, but also seeing that style again as Zapata, what he did, and I wanted to look at that and how he flustered him in a lot of ways, and he was moving. He kept moving. Not that he didn't stand and land a combination with him and all that and counter, because Taylor can counter, especially like with his left hook and his uppercut. How do you see this one playing out? Right now you have Ramirez an underdog, but it's no kind of 3-1, 4-1.
No, it's funny the way this one's developed for me. Everybody looking at it being pretty close with, you know, Taylor understandably being a slight favorite. When the fight was signed or when it was getting to a point where you even thought these two guys might fight, I was always thinking Taylor and not trying to overanalyze it, but the more I thought about it deeply and as this fight's been getting closer, like you're doing, really looking at it hard, thinking about it hard to make a call, I think I'm going with Ramirez in a tight fight by decision. I think, and then why, I think this would normally be a little overrated. I mean, I think people, this is the type of fight you could very well get people whining, saying, oh, well, Taylor fought in the U.S. and you know, it was the judges. I don't see it as something where it's going to be unfair judging, but when the guys are as close as these two, what I got to say is, because I think it happened with Progray and Taylor, and I mean, that fight was extremely tight. You know, it was over in the UK, and Taylor got the decision. I don't think unfair, but I just think it was a tight fight, and then it was Progray had to fight on the road. You know, you have to go through different routines, things like that, and when a fight's that tight, I thought it could have been a draw or maybe a slight Progray win. I didn't have any problem with Taylor getting that decision, but I looked at that one. It was so tight that I thought, you know, that was one that was so tight that just simply being in your home area, you know, if it would have been the U.S., Progray might have eked that out. I don't mean just because of judging. I mean just because of your comfort level of being in your own country. I kind of see this one that way now. It's so close that, you know, debating where this one was going to be and end up being the U.S., that not because of the judging, but just because of Taylor being in his home, excuse me, Ramirez being in his home country, Taylor having to travel, I think that might just kind of be the difference there when they're that tight. than the way I see it playing out itself. I think Taylor is more versatile and can do more different things. They both have good pedigree, but Olympians, but Taylor's is better. You know, he did better in the Olympics. I think Taylor's a good puncher, but not a great puncher. I actually think the same with Ramirez. But I think in the ring, what I'm looking at with Taylor, I thought it was going to come in the Prograis fight. I got to be fair to Taylor. He had the toughness and the chin that it didn't quite come in like I thought. But I'm still going to take his two, I think, most difficult fights really to me, because I think Baranchuk was more difficult for Taylor than Postol was. I saw in the middle part of that fight with Baranchuk, and I think Baranchuk's real limited, that now Taylor looked like he was kind of having a little trouble for a bit there, not responding that well. Then to his credit, you know, he rebounded, kind of caught a second win, clearly won the fight. He dropped Baranchuk. But I just remember that moment. I thought against a puncher like Prograis that maybe late in the fight, that would be enough for Prograis to stop him. He wasn't able to do that, but he did bust up his eye. He was coming up strong late, coming on strong late, was able to do some damage to Taylor's eye. Now, I think Prograis is a better puncher than Ramirez, but I'm just thinking that Ramirez's size and strength, Taylor's got good size and strength too, but he's a bigger and stronger guy than Baranchuk or Prograis is, even though he's not quite the puncher that Prograis is. And I just think that is going to probably make the difference, that when Ramirez is just a little bit bigger and stronger, and he's going to be able to handle Taylor a little bit better like that. And I just think he's going to be able to squeak one out. I'm with you. I thought Ramirez actually clearly beat Postol, saying that. I didn't agree with him. And they don't like when you say this, but I still believe it. I believe it when I was watching the fight. I still believe it today. I just thought Postol was in a glorified survival mode in that fight. So Ramirez didn't look great, but I just think he was in with a guy that wasn't particularly anxious to engage at all in that fight, and was happy to go to 12. And you know, some people took that as outboxing Ramirez somehow, and I just didn't see it that way at all. So Ramirez has definitely had fights where he hadn't looked that good. Like you said, he had a lot of trouble with Zepeda, but Zepeda has proven to be a lot better than we thought. So, you know, he blew out Hooker, you know, after a lot of good back and forth. I just think Hooker might not be that good. So, you know, you got to be careful with this analysis. That's why this one's tight. But I just think, you know, Prograis looked a little small in there against Taylor, even though he's a power puncher. And he came on strong. I thought he could have gotten a nod or a draw, but I don't argue with Taylor winning. But I just think Ramirez's strength, that in those moments, he'll be able to come on a little bit stronger than Prograis. And I think it's just going to be enough for him to legitimately edge one out. I mean, I think people might complain about judging and, well, Taylor's in the U.S., but I think it'll be fair. In other words, close but fair, maybe because Ramirez has just the advantage of the comfort of fighting in his home country. He squeaks out a win. I think now he's going to squeak out the upset.
Yeah, and Taylor's been here for about a month, too. I heard that in an interview lately. So he got out here very early, which is really smart. He's got a nice tan out there in Vegas. So, yeah, I mean, I I'm looking at the you know, putting some Skrilla on, you know, the slight underdog, Ramirez. And then I like the over. I don't think he's going to stop him.
I agree. I don't see this. I don't see this fight ending in a knockout. I don't. You could always be wrong.
It'd have to be like an injury TKO or something.
Yeah, unless somehow Ramirez was able to. I mean, you know, I just think that was Hooker. But, you know, you do have that moment of Ramirez in your eye, and he's got Robert Garcia now. Like, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm with you. I think this one goes 12. I feel pretty certain about it. But only scenario I could see KO would be, you know, if somehow Ramirez is just able to really steamroll him like he did with Hooker. But that's the only really time we've seen Ramirez do that. You know, that's the thing that worries me a little about Ramirez. I don't think he's that big of a punch. You know, he likes to, you know, come forward, but he's an okay puncher, but he's not a great puncher. And I think Taylor's an okay puncher, but not a great puncher. I don't think this one will end in a stoppage. And plus Taylor, you know, I got to give him credit. You know, he did show enough for it. I was wondering if he was going to be able to, but he did show enough to, I thought he definitely beat Baranchuk, but when he did look a little distressed, he came back from it. And, you know, he had the eye damage a bit in Pro Gray, and he didn't fold.
Right.
He didn't wilt. And Pro Gray can punch. So, you know, I think that, you know, he's shown that he can at least, you know, handle some adversity without folding, and that should be enough that there's not going to be any kind of stoppage in this one.
Anything else, John, before we get you out of here, man? Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I think we've covered things well, but just I'll finish again something we talked about at the beginning. A little of my personal frustration is just this. I like it, as Steven Espinosa put it himself, you know, this alphabet belts is a marketing tool. I just think the fans got to get a little wiser to that. I'll let you go, and I'm going to get off. But, you know, Canelo, I like Canelo. I like the tough challenges he's taken on. I think he's good for boxing. I think he is the legit number one pound-for-pound guy. But, you know, I do have to say, I think I've even seen Canelo a bit savvy with his own marketing of himself and his people with this. You know, he was – and I'm not critical of Canelo like other people, but even him, who I do think is number one and has fought tougher competition than anybody in boxing, you know, he's kind of used this 168-pound belt thing as a – kind of a marketing thing to maybe take a little less dangerous opponents. I mean, you know, yeah, you say it was an extra fight, but, you know, he parlayed that marketing spin into the Yildirim fight, and then he just had Saunders, and then he's going to do Plant, which, you know, those are interesting fights. I mean, I like the Plant fight for interest, but, you know, let's be totally blunt. You know, is Caleb Plant really the toughest opposition for him? Probably not. But you know, he's got everybody on the unify, you know, he's going to pick up all these 168-pound, you know, alphabet belts. And that's, you know, why we need to see that. Now, you know, also you can say that those are the top two guys at 168, a little weak right now. Got to be fair to Canelo like that, but then that gets into too many weight classes to me and things like that. But it's just too many belts, too many weight classes. Just my final thought for the night is just, please, fans, try to look a little more critically at that. Have fun following the sport. It's about entertainment. But when we get into those issues, try to be a little more critical on that.
There we go. Thanks for joining tonight and, you know, the rescheduling and whatnot. You take it easy.
All right, Chris. Great being with you, as always.
Yep. Enjoy the fights, man.
All right.
And it's not going to be late on the East Coast, John. Not gonna be that late.
No, and I think
good.
The promo hasn't been great, but to me, it still does all come down to TV numbers. So for boxing's sake,
right,
with a really good fight, top two guys at 140 pounds, I hope that we bring in that East Coast and that West Coast audience, and we get good regular basic cable TV numbers. I think nothing would be greater for boxing than that.
I'm with you. All right, buddy, you take it easy.
All right, Chris, take care. Bye bye.
All righty. We got all sorts of stuff there. And just cleaning up, I did think Roman, though, I mean, the pivoting, you know, the uppercut, the right hands, the jabs, I mean, just snapping the neck. The thing that was bugging me about the broadcast is like, dude, we get it, man. He's not Mike Tyson. We get it. He's not Wilder. He's not, you know, some of these huge punchers. Like, but, dude, do you see how he's landing these punches, though? You see the skill level? You know, and Roman sometimes can, you know, like, battle with some dudes and keep it close. And then, you know, he was in that moment where you're like his last fight, I was like, wow, did he slow down from that MJ fight? Because he did, you know, he took some good, you know, some punishment there. But, I mean, he looked great. He looked great. I mean, I liked what I saw out of Roman. And that Aleem Roman, like we mentioned, would be dope. You know, I actually got a message saying, you know, I'm undervaluing Xavier Martinez. That may be. It was a damn good fight, dude. I mean, you got, like, Martinez landed 329 punches, and oh boy, Burgos landed 261. And Burgos don't go anywhere, dude. He's not a guy you could just knock out left and right. I did have him inching it. You know, I definitely have him inching it. I had him out to, let's say, 3-2-ish, something like that. Good pace to the fight early on, no doubt. I'm looking at my scorecard. The seventh round was very close. It was a good-ass fight. It was a really fun fight. You know, and Burgos just kept firing back at him. But I think the harder shots, I think the scorecard sucked. 3-99-91. That's why they're booing, rightfully so. That sucked. Those fight cards sucked. But, you know, 7-3, 6-4, maybe you had a 5-5. I didn't see Burgos winning that fight, though. I'm not saying that. I just think that, you know, we'll find out. You know, we'll find out. I mean, there's plenty of rough and tumble dudes that get hit a fair amount when you're like, huh, I don't know if I see a top-level guy here. That's all I'm saying. When it comes to this, though, this here unification fight, like I mentioned, I did see that Ramirez Zapata fight again, and he's a southpaw, right? So, you know, just looking at that, Zapata jabbing his ass off, turning him at times, circling the whole time, taking a half step to the side, and even at times throwing two or three punches, you know, which I think that's, you know, I think that's Taylor's capable of that. I'm not saying he's not capable of being on the move for a lot of the fight, but on these higher level guys that he's faced, I just haven't seen it. You know, like I said, I think he's got good head movement. There's no doubt about that. But he just gets hit flush too much to call him some kind of top level defender. More versatile. I can't say that's not the point. And even Ramirez doing some of that jumping in and out, you know, with his jab. But jumping in and out, you know, just jumping in and out. By the way, 90 seconds left of the live stream, 646-381-4990. That's 646-381-4990. You can jump in before the live stream, if you're listening to the browser, that is. And at times, he was actually able to push Ramirez back, you know, at times, in those hooks to the head and body, some really good body. I mean, obviously, Ramirez is a great body puncher, too. And there's just times where Ramirez jumps in with his jab or with his punches in general, and he'll get caught with shots coming in, too. Straight left hands, for sure. You did start to see in that fight, though, Ramirez start to land and then apply his pressure, but he was missing a whole lot in that fight. I thought he finished strong, like midway in down the stretch and whatnot. It just, for too large a portions in that Zapata fight with Ramirez, it seems like he was just kind of stuck in neutral, you know? And like I said, he did start landing better. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sure he won that fight. You know, I can't sit there and say, "Oh, I got seven rounds for sure for Zapata." I think I did a draw, if I remember correctly. But watching it again, it was a tight ass fight, dude. And just, you know, Taylor Postal, Ramirez Postal, there's all Postal, like, as a come forward fighter. Here's the thing on Taylor, and this is what started. Like, I'm like John. I did favor Taylor in this fight. For a while, started really thinking about it more in depth, and sometimes you can overthink it, no doubt about it. But, you know, Postal coming forward is just not really a come-forward fighter. And I'm talking about the Taylor fight, you know what I mean? The Taylor was kind of in and out all around. That was a good fight. He won the fight, I thought, cleaner than Ramirez over Postal. Even Progre, he comes at you, especially when he's got you hurt. They don't break you down or everything, but he doesn't just balls to the wall go at you ever since he started stepping up in levels too. And even if you look at that fight, he didn't press the whole time. He did brawl too much. I thought he should have boxed more. I thought he's a little bit more versatile than he showed. And he even admitted that. And I got to admit that, Baranchik, that is true. There was some moments in that fight where I'm like, Taylor's starting to show that thing again. But Ramirez, definitely one of the keys, obviously, will be that jab, dude. And, you know, you could say double, triple jab. Yeah, I think that's important, too. I think after a while, though, his jab is powerful, too. It's pretty quick. I think after a while, though, if you're doubling, tripling your jab too much, then it probably will get countered or probably get caught up and countered anyway. But I don't know. I guess my biggest question is, does Taylor really have a very similar style to Zapata? Or can he come close to it, like I'm saying, right? I mean, I don't know. I just think Taylor just loves to engage too much. Can he really stick to an outside game long enough, for long enough stretches? Taylor's got a good uppercut, he lead or counter. You know, he can counter with hooks. The guy's versatile, you know. But even in that Prograis fight, I watched that one too. And he just didn't look to move and box much at all, you know. And his hands are low a lot. And he just ends up either inside brawling, because he likes to do that. That's what Ramirez, he's a good short puncher inside, or just stay in front of someone. And it's like, is he really that slick? I guess he's going to have to prove it to me in this one. So I'm going a minor underdog. And you know, just to kind of reiterate some of that, it is a minor underdog. It's not some kind of huge upset, and I did take a waiver out last week, right, on Figueroa, and that was a bigger waiver. Well, not necessarily money-wise, but, you know, it was a higher point spread, but I'm looking at 5 dimes plus 215. That's basically the highest I see it. Oh, my bad. Something called Sportbet. I'm on ProBoxingOdds.com. It's kind of a cool, it is a cool site, because you get to see a lot of the different sites, but plus 221 is the biggest one I see, but a lot of times you see a plus 188, plus 190, plus 200. Like I said, 5 dimes, plus 215. I'm going to do it. That, the fact that I don't know if Taylor, and this also plays into it too. Can he, because remember, I'm talking about Zapata and all that stuff, but he didn't win the fight, you know? Like, whether you thought it was a draw or he won the fight or Ramirez snuck it out, go to BoxRec. He didn't win the fight, you know. It's an MD. It wasn't a UD, but it was a majority decision. So someone added a draw. And now you got the same exact scorecards off the Postol fight. Or scorecard. Well, you're going to have not the scorecards, but, you know, the judges. So, you know, can he win? I mean, is 7-5 really going to get you the win, or is that a draw? You know what I mean? And when we say 7-5, like, I do kind of have the feeling, good chance that I'll walk away from the fight with my scorecard readed 6-6 or 7-5 to Taylor, and it'll either be a split decision. I'm assuming it'll be a split decision. Or a split draw, because, you know, he's had those two majority decisions, I think, now. So I guess just odds, you know. I don't really have exact knowledge on that, you know, why I think that. But what are the odds you're going to win by another majority decision, you know what I mean? I guess you could say, well, Chris, he's already had two. True, but I'm just saying it would be a split or something. But, you know, I'm not trying to take away credit from Taylor. Like, when this fight got made, I did lean Taylor. Not by much, but I did. But, you know, as the time has gone by, took a while to announce this fight, obviously, because of COVID. And as much as I think that these tight fights, one of these tight fights aren't going to go. And there are times where he does just reach and whatnot. I do think he cuts the ring off pretty well. And when he does have you hurt, he can follow up pretty damn good. And I thought he beat Postol, but it was close. I don't know. There's just something that's telling me that Ramirez is going to win. And even if, you know, I'm not saying he's going to knock him out. Like I said, I got the over, and I got on the plus side of Ramirez. I just think that although Taylor's more versatile, I don't know if he can be circling and pivoting and on the outside all the time. And then will he be active enough? You know, you got to be active against Ramirez. And usually activity with Taylor is fairly close up. And I think he's going to rely on that. I think he's going to fall back on those tendencies when push comes to shove, and that's where Ramirez wants you. So, you know, I definitely see Taylor winning the first chunk of rounds. I usually, not to sound like a broken record, but I usually do think that when it comes to outside boxers, because generally outside boxers get the better start, right? As long as they're both on the top level or even just whatever, evenly matched or close to even. And then, you know, that's what a come forward fighter does, right? They hit you on the hip. They work you to the body, you know, all that. And I just, you know, the body punching, he could take a damn good punch. Yeah, I got Ramirez winning by split decision. So obviously, you know, I talked about a flyer last week on Figueroa. How about a flyer on a draw? These MDs probably won't come. It could be a split, but wonder if he does go out there and win seven rounds on our scorecards at home. That could be a draw. That could be a draw. We know. And I'm not trying to say that, you know, oh, it's already in the bag for Ramirez, but we all know hometown, or not hometown, but, you know, home country, West Coast. Just like, if, you know, some people thought Prograde did enough or maybe it should have been a draw. But he was, you know, he was on the road. He was in Scotland. So it is what it is. Anyway, that's my prediction for that fight. I'm going to go ahead and bring in 310 and see what's going on with him. What's up, Mark? How you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on, Chris? Shit, man, it feels like old times. Didn't I just call in last week and the week before?
Yeah,
no, was
yeah
that the
exactly.
Week before that?
Yeah,
weird.
I think it was, yeah.
Back to normal. But, yeah, dude, before I forget, you mentioned the fucking don't throw anything on the over. Do you know what the over is? The over is fucking minus 410. Don't do that.
It's funny because I haven't done it yet, but I hadn't even looked at it. I guess my whole point was this thing's going decision. I'm pretty confident. But that's a good call.
Yeah. There's a little bit smarter move might be to do, a little savvier might be to do Taylor by decision. That's minus 120, 118 across the board,
sure.
Pretty
yeah.
much, if he wins by decision. You know what I mean?
And it's a tight fight,
so
that could totally happen. Yeah, that's a good call. It's a very good call.
Yeah, because I see him fucking getting the not getting the knockout over fucking Ramirez. That's for sure. You know what I mean? It's funny because I feel like probably a lot of people's views are exactly like how you were describing. And I don't know. I missed most of John's segment, but the same thing like with me. When the fight first got announced, I was like, Josh Taylor's going to fucking win that shit easy. But then when you think about it, and then, like you said, the key fucking fights that you got to look at is that's a Pettis fight, obviously. You can't really look at the Postol fight, but they both reveal the same thing. They both reveal the fact that look at how both of those guys were. If you look at their feet, you look at Zepeda, he doesn't look like a long, rangy, lanky type of dude, but he was fighting like that. He was stepping back the whole time on his back foot, waiting. And he had a good jab, good, long, stiff jab, just like Postol. And when you look at Ramirez, yeah, he's got a good jab. but it's not the same. I think it's due to, like, his reach. It's almost like as if he fights like he has a short reach. His jab might be powerful, but it's not like – it's not stiff like Postal's. It's not stiff like how Zepeda's
was. Yeah, not super effective.
No, it's not long. It's not long. You know, pretty all of his punches aren't long. He fights short, and that's what makes him look so dope when he fights. He's so fluid. You know what I mean? Like, the way he moves, like, he's a real, like, you know, he's a real I like watching him because he's like, you know, it's like sweet science. His hands and his arms sort of move in conjunction with his body. But because of that, because he has such short, sharp punches, he's got to get close to people. And as we've seen, people like that can't really fuck with Ramirez if you think about it. You got to be on your back foot. You got to be staying away from Ramirez. You got to have a long reach. And you just got to be basically fighting like a bitch the whole time. Justo is not going to do that. He's not going to fucking do that.
No, he's definitely
really
not.
Isn't
You're right.
Yeah, man. Like, it's he's. Can you really picture Taylor on his back foot just jabbing? No, he's not going to do that. And he doesn't have – he almost flicks his jab more than he fucking throws it actually with power. He really does. He's not really
he'd
all
have to
that
do
powerful.
That for like, he'd have to do that for like over 2 minutes each round.
Yeah, and that's not him. That's not him. That's not him. And I know why it's not him, or I think I know why it's not him, and that was revealed in the fucking Baranchuk fight. He was getting hit. Like, when he doesn't come forward on dudes, and if he's not, like, really assertive, and if his output isn't high, you see him get hit with a lot of shit. Baranchuk was hitting him a lot with that left hook on the inside. Hitting him to the body, hitting him to the side of the head, like, whenever you would drop his hand. And, yeah, obviously, you know, he won that Baranchuk fight fucking clearly, but all the things that gave him problems are like all the things that fucking Ramirez shines at. If you really look at it, Ramirez has a dope fucking left hook. He does. And he's a little bit unorthodox in the sense that he's just trying to fucking hurt you. You know what I mean? And we all know. I mean, you got to take the bitch factor into consideration. By bitch factor, I mean, this is a dude from the fucking UK. Right, he's not gonna be prepared for this type of shit with a dude that's not backing up, coming towards you. Yeah, we can talk about Regis Prograis, but all those rounds that Prograis won was when he was more assertive, when his output was higher, and he wasn't fucking afraid to fucking come forward. So it's Ramirez is gonna be coming forward the whole fucking time. Yeah, he's gonna be getting outboxed a little bit. You're gonna see him get countered with a couple short shots, but in between those shots, going to see him land some big shit. I wouldn't be surprised if we see fucking Taylor go down in one of the later rounds. I'm definitely taking fucking Ramirez, 100%. But it's going to be close and it's going to be fun as hell because of how they fight, you know?
Yeah, I agree. 100%. Give me a competitive fight.
I know. And the fact that Ramirez is fucking +200, yeah, he's +200. For him to win by decision is +310. I don't know what I put down on that. I probably would do the +200 and then try to back, or I would put down, I probably would first wager on Josh Taylor by points and then back it up with the +200. You know, because then you can just put down the same amount on both and it's a guaranteed no loss. Just
right.
I mean, the only way you would lose is if fucking Josh Taylor gets the knockout. And considering the fact that he's from the fucking UK, we already know he's soft. So
here we go.
Like, so his punches are soft. And so it really doesn't matter. Like, I mean, it really doesn't matter. Like, he's just going to be soft in general. Like I said, don't be surprised if he fucking goes down, just can't really handle the fucking heat and the later rounds and stuff like that. This is proven. This is proven over time. It's not hating. It's just facts. This is history. It's just what it is.
It's just what it is.
So what did you say the Ramirez by decision
yeah,
was?
Let her out. Just let her out. Thank you.
Hello. What'd you say?
Ramirez by decision was what? Plus 300, plus 400? What was it?
Ramirez by decision is plus 350, dude. And that's something you got to get in on quick. Oh, no, plus 310.
Yeah.
My bad. Plus 310.
Yeah, either way.
Because that actually changes.
300, shit.
And I've seen these odds fucking changing quite a bit past couple of days, you know, but when you think, I mean, you had a good point with the fucking Zepeda fight. You know, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, yeah, but he's not, you can't compare him just because he's southpaw. You can't compare him. He's stepping back, taking a half step back every fucking 2 seconds, just like fucking Postel. Never, ever, ever coming forward, just waiting. Just waiting, just waiting, just waiting. You know, so, like, that's not fucking Josh Taylor, and he doesn't have the reach to do that. He doesn't have that sort of lanky, sort of stiff jab. He doesn't. His jab is, like, short, sharp, accurate, but it's sort of flicking it. It's not like he's doing it to keep distance. He's doing it to set shit up, I feel like. I don't know.
Is that
overanalyzing or do you
No,
agree
I don't
with that?
I don't think so. I did mention that too. Sometimes we can overanalyze, but when I started really thinking about it, they just don't have the same style, man. They just don't.
And then take
so,
into
yeah,
account.
So yeah, is there a way to
the
beat him?
Factor.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but
and then
yeah,
and he's the bitch factor, meaning the UK factor. That's a huge factor here. So, like, I mean, we got to look at it. Like, he's never been under this kind of pressure like that. Regis Prograis is a little bit too – he's too clean, too much of a straight-up
boxer.
In and
out.
He's not throwing these crazy-ass, wide-ass fucking, you know, these hooks out of nowhere. That right hook that Ramirez would just throw, like – overhand, like, fucking over the dudes, like, come down from the top. He doesn't do shit like that. And so a guy like that, of course, you know, he's going to lose against a superior boxer, even though, like, he lost that fight, but it was more on activity and because Josh Taylor is a slightly cleaner boxer. That's all. But it was so close. What was it, a split decision?
Maybe.
It could have been. Do you think that was like a legit, like, straight up decision win for Josh Taylor? I do.
I thought he won
straight up.
I was comfortable.
By like one round.
Yeah. Yeah, I was comfortable, especially where it was. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's going to be any politics to this, and I actually would like, just for boxing in general, I would like Josh Taylor to win. Just because I want to see him fight Teofimo, you know? Even though he's talking this Terrence Crawford shit, a funner fight would be him and Teofimo. Because that builds up Teofimo.
That's a good point.
You know, whereas Teofimo versus Ramirez, that's sort of, I'm not going to say it's tailor-made for Teofimo, but it's a little bit more predictable and it's a little less credit to Teofimo when he wins that by decision. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, if he takes
and
out.
That was a majority. Oh, sorry, that was a majority decision, by the way. 114-114 for Taylor. 115-113 and 117-112 for that program.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had it 15-13. Right, I think I had it like around there. It wasn't like I just feel like he didn't pick it up. He felt a sense of urgency. He realized he was losing the majority of the rounds. I forgot, like 6, 7, 8 rounds in Prograis. And then he won a few rounds. Like, remember, he picked it up. He picked up his activity.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he won. Yeah, like, so, and that's the thing. This is a guy who's, Ramirez's whole style is about fucking picking it up the whole fucking time. That's him. Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah, at first I didn't see why this fight was, as you know, enticing,
right.
I guess, you know, style-wise. But now when you really think about it, it really fucking is. This isn't fucking Victor Postol, man. This fucking Victor Postol is such a fight. I fucking hate fighters like that. He's not even like a fighter. He's just waiting. Just waiting. He was never assertive at all. I've never seen him do anything besides just take a half step back, try to jab you, try to stay away from you. It's like, dude, man, someone just fucking get this guy the fuck out of here. Just knock him out and fucking, like, you know, like, because, I mean, I don't know why the hell you got all these fucking fights, because what the fuck? You know what I mean? That's worse than fucking Andre, but, yeah, I would, I think best betting option is definitely Ramirez. Well, choosing Taylor by decision, but then backing out, because that's minus 110. So, people, do the math. That's minus, that's minus 118 for him by decision. And then you back it up with fucking Ramirez to win outright, and that's plus 200. You put the same amount of money on each, and you're guaranteed not to lose anything. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, a little bit more on one or whatever it is.
Right, but it's, yeah.
Think there's anything fake, anything bullshit about it. I think it's a real fight. That's the reason why I'm looking forward to it. It is what it is. So that is my prediction. And what was John? Did John pick Taylor or did he pick Ramirez?
He did the same thing we did. He went Ramirez.
Oh, wow.
No.
Okay. For the same reasons? Zepeda?
Yep.
The style of these guys?
Well,
dude,
yeah, just
have
in
you,
general. He kind of felt like...
Have you ever seen anyone?
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, like, have we ever seen anybody that fights close, that fights from close distance, that really gave fucking Ramirez, like, problems? Like, won them, but, like, you know, like, really, like, beat him? No. These guys are guys that fucking didn't want, like, are, like, stepping back, scared, trying to counter... Very long, long-rangey dudes. Is that what John said too, or no? Or he was just more on aggression?
Well, no, I mean, I don't remember exact word for word, but it is kind of like, hey, you know, Taylor ends up in brawls, dude. He just does. He ends up because he feels like he can fight on the inside. And I'm not saying he can't fight someone on the inside, but I don't see him ducking a bunch of punches. On the inside.
I think he has to, man, because that reach. I think he has to. You know what I mean? I think he has to, for sure. You know? I mean, Bokcek only lists him an inch shorter than fucking than Victor Postol. Then I'm realizing, fuck, these UK fighters are lying about their fucking heights, too, on fucking Bokcek and everything. There's lying all across the board about everything. So, I mean, it's just... You know, these fucking dudes are, I mean, we'll see it. I mean, it's, it happens time and time again. It usually happens more when they come here. But just based off, you know, this Billy Joe Saunders bullshit, you know, I'm going to throw some down. I'm throwing some down on the knockout. I'm thinking there's a good 40% chance that he's going to get stopped, you know, but stopped in a way that not knocked out cold, but just broken down and just like, you know, he's just going to realize where he is. You know, he's going to realize he's in America, that these are real fighters, and that he's in a real fight for the first time in his life. And then when he realizes that, he's just going to break down and start crying, running. It's going to be a reality check for him, you know?
And he does seem like the... He seems like the guy that if he gets hit with a clean shot, he's going to want to give it back quick, too.
Yeah. Until that happens 100 times later in round 9, round 10, when the fight is really going
on. Then he'll get
on
the bike, he'll switch gears.
Yeah, then his true colors will show. And then he's going to dwindle. You know, definitely, I would definitely look out for that because he gets hit a lot because he's southpaw. He gets hit with that right hook, that left hook a lot up top and a lot, not too much to the body, but he does. If Baranchuk was hitting him with that a bunch, which is pretty unexpected, I forgot all about that until you mentioned it or maybe John's talking about it.
Yeah, John mentioned that, like, too, that there was moments in there where you're like, Wow, he's having some problems here all of a sudden. Yeah.
The left hook, because he was getting hit by that left hook a lot. So, yeah, I'm thinking definitely Ramirez win, but gearing a little bit more towards a stoppage for sure. More towards stoppage, not a knockout, but just like a bitch stoppage, you know, like a quitting type of stoppage, you know, one of those types of things. You know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, that's for sure my prediction on that. I forgot what else I wanted to bring up real quick before I get off. I feel like, whatever. But that, I think maybe that whole, does this mean that, like, for sure Wilder is going to fight Tyson Fury next? Like, or
I mean, it seems that way. I mean, there is the possibility of him retiring or just saying, screw it, I'll fight it in court. And, well, you know, you can retire as a fighter, but you probably still owe him some money. Maybe he's going to say, screw it, I'm catch me in court. I'll hit you with a slander lawsuit and see how you like it. I don't know. I mean, there is – we're going to see the maneuverability, but being that the arbiter that, you know, Bob Arum himself goes through multiple times, this dude's legit, they now have evidence that they've been whatever, and now they can actually take that to court if he doesn't, you know. I don't know. I mean,
fight.
It was – yeah, and Bob Arum's already said – F step aside money. We're gonna take care of it. They already got July 24th for pay per view figured out quickly. So
maybe maybe this is really all just because they heard my segment and probably other people talking about it or whatever. People that repeated my shit on YouTube or whoever the fuck was out there about Luis Ortiz taking a dive against Andy Ruiz, and they're like, "Oh shit, they're on to us." All right, let's just see if we can just go straight into that fucking. Let's see if we can go straight into that trilogy fight now, and just cash out now, because I mean a lot of this court stuff. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's because the lawyers that I've dealt with and I went to school with are just shady as hell. But I mean, I hear about that shit all the time. Be behind the scenes, like. Really, the guy who wins the case is just whoever's client has more money, and both the lawyers behind, both the attorneys behind closed doors make a little deal. They even have a legal precedent for that. They call it some bullshit, some shady, and they just pay. One guy just pays the other guy, and it's like, all right, you'll win.
Sure.
Like, you know, like that shit happens
right.
all the time, and it's so who knows what that's about, but I mean – I don't know. People are believing that Deontay's getting better. You know, Rogan was talking about it the other day. I don't know if you heard about it. He was like, have you seen Deontay on the pad? He looks like a totally different
fighter.
The video,
right. He's actually on the pad for once, though. I guess you could say that's an improvement because he doesn't really do pads or a heavy bag. But, yeah, a lot of people are trying to say, do you see him slip that punch now? Do you see him step to the side? You see, the only thing I'll say is at least he's throwing. I have seen a three-punch combo, which I literally didn't think that was possible out of him. But other than that, yeah, I got to see it in the ring.
The fact that you got to say that to a bronze medalist who, was undefeated for so long, it was like, I don't know, whatever his record was, 29-0 or whatever, with 29 knockouts and 30 fights or whatever shit, is just – it's whatever, but I would wish that they, you know, take the Andy Ruiz route. That's a little bit better. It's a little bit more believable. If he knocks out Ruiz, I think that he has a much longer career, you know, and, you know, that would just be a little bit better rather than him going against Tyson Fury, because unless he has only one fight left on his deal.
I give him credit for going back in this fight, though. I'll say that. I'll give him credit for that, because not a lot of – there's plenty of people that just wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would do it. I mean, you got to be stubborn as hell, but you got to be very confident, you know, like to do some shit like that. And then from the whole perspective of it being a real fight or not, it's like if Tyson Fury was to do anything else besides what he did the first time, or I mean the second time, the fight is fake.
Right.
You know, like, so, I mean, like, unless Wilder only has one more fight on his fucking deal, if he has a few fights left, then that's, you know, more than likely that that's going to probably be fake. Unless, you know, he's, yeah, I mean, but it's, I don't know. It's, I don't know if it's the best idea ever. And,
yeah, right.
It's really not.
It's a big risk. Yeah, no, it is. It really is.
Yeah.
If he's talking about still fighting for the next 4 or 5 years, it's a big risk. There's no doubt about it. I give him credit.
It's crazy.
For that.
You lose against him. What are you going to do? Oh, yeah, but you can fight Andy Ruiz. That's a fucking winnable fight.
Yep. Yep.
And you bring back everything, your reputation, you bring back your numbers, mm-hmm. you bring back your credibility, all that shit.
Yep.
You guys can sell whatever. You guys can throw on a whole bunch of shit. You guys can go on to a season 6. Fuck season 4.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, like, you guys can continue on with this shit for a while. You know, so, but, you know, it could be just about money.
Wins,
it could just be.
And if he wins, no matter if, you know, you think it's fake or not, if he wins, his popularity will be like, oh my God, that guy won that fight after that?
I think he would. I think he would win.
You know?
If they were to fight again, he would win. I'm pretty sure he would win against Tyson Fury if they were to fight again. I mean, there's, I don't see how, I mean,
that much bigger.
Or it would just be him and Joshua. It would be him and Joshua saga, or, like, you know, it would go back and forth, like, you know. Because I got to cash out on that and all that shit. But, you know, just one more thing before I go. I don't know who said it earlier. How the fuck do you eat this? There's no fucking way. I mean, I can't believe people are still out there believing that there's no chance that fucking Caleb Plant can fucking beat Canelo. I mean, just the way that he taught me, he's the most dedicated. I mean, he's the only guy that Canelo's ever fought, you know, since who knows, that actually gives a shit about boxing. It's like his life. He actually really, you know, it would be really tough for me to believe that he would ever accept some kind of payment for a dive or anything like that, which I don't know if you know what the actual gate was for that Canelo and Billy Joe Saunders fight.
Not out yet.
You
said, not out yet.
Did you get fucking... Oh, it's not yet? Well...
No,
I mean,
we're going to find out soon, though. We should find out soon. Texas takes a little bit longer, but we found out about all the Texas fights, so it's we'll find out.
Well, they better overshoot it, because if we hear that Canelo made fucking $30 million, and Billy Joe made $10 million or $8 million. Where the fuck is that money coming from, guys? Come on. Are you guys making money off the gate and off the fucking pay-per-views? Or are you guys making money off the fucking betting revenue? Yeah,
right.
How is his own profiting? How is his own profiting? That's the reason why I want to hear talking about $10
million. Yeah, they're not
talking
profit.
About $10 million.
Yeah,
I don't know. They just can't give away money to a guy that they don't have a long-term deal with. That's a little weird. I hear Caleb Plant talking about $10 million. If you're gonna give him $10 million and give Canelo fucking $30 million, we better see a fucking $60 million gate, motherfuckers. Because where the fuck? I mean, and those fucking pay-per-view numbers better add up. Because you motherfuckers better not be fucking just making money off the betting revenue. Like, you know what I mean? Actually put on real fucking fights. And Caleb, if you're fucking thinking about doing that shit like all these other fucking guys did, then, I mean, like, fuck you. Like, you know what I mean? That shouldn't even cross your mind. Like, what the fuck? Fucking take a little bit less money. Never take a fucking dive. But, yeah, he's got really, really good chances, and that Billy Joe shit, that was a long dive, but I'll get into it more in the future, 100%, for sure. All right,
buddy. Thanks calling in like old times.
For sure. I'm looking forward to the weekend, man. Hopefully it comes through, but late stoppage, but definitely Ramirez. Cool, man.
There we go. All right, buddy. Take it
Peace.
Easy. Have a good night. Peace.
All righty.
We got all, and I'm just going to guess what Portland's going to pick. I'm guessing He's going with his brethren. And by the way, 503, you let me know when you're ready to give your takes and all that stuff. Obviously, this is, dude, talked about this now for a while. The Mexican fighter, Mexican-American, whatever the hell, they are helping, that, like, they are leading the charge currently of getting interest going this year. If you look at this run now, it's been fun, man. It's been fun. And you can take it back to Oscar Valdez's highlight reel knockout of Burchell, 70,000 folks in Cowboy Stadium. Shit, we even got actually a competitive fight with Areola. That undercard was full of Mexicanos too. So, and obviously Figueroa. You know, Figueroa getting the job done. Last week, and so yeah, big shots out to the Mexican fighters fan base all day long. By the way, I think I mentioned this earlier, but if you didn't hear, Jaron Boots Ennis has some movement going on. Jake Donovan reported yesterday. When I mean movement, his representation. All of a sudden, he's being promoted. Well, who's his promoter? I thought his manager was this, that, that. All sorts of weird stuff was going on with him, and it was affecting him because, unfortunately, in this game, you know, if you're not signed with the right squad or at least co-signed, right, you're not going to get the fights, whether that be, you know, I guess he had a better chance of getting Crawford, I guess, but they'd still probably want a couple options, a free fight deal or something like that, and all of a sudden you start chopping your money up too much, and you're like, whoa, what's going on? And this was, you know, this played out for Victory Boxing Promotion, the settlement with Chris Mindorf. You know, it was in the U.S. District Court, Southern District of Iowa, so up here in my parts. So obviously a lot of it's sealed or whatever. You know, there's not a lot of, you know, information on this per se. There is still a 60-day window of dismissal thing where they could fight and come back. But it sounds like it was Cameron Duncan, right? The legal issue came up with a fallout between Mindorf and Duncan. And then all of a sudden, you heard Mindorf going around saying he's the promoter, acting as if the promoter's what they're calling it. And or that's what, you know, Ennis was saying too, like, wait a second, you're my promoter? So Mindorf filed a lawsuit. You know, and Ennis was kind of stuck on that. A lot of people are saying, oh, everybody's ducking him. But if you're, you know, it's a little tough. He's been with Showtime, and slowly but surely, you know, this last time he led a PBC card and was the A-side on the card. So you assume he's going to align with Heyman to work his way up the PBC welterweight. But who knows? Maybe he will go try to get Bud. You know, either way, he's in a much better spot. His whole thing was that he was signed with, you know, Cameron Duncan and not Mindorf. So that's in his pops, Derek and his senior, you know, they have a good relationship. So that's the whole thing. But he is now settled. And like I said, I think there is some sort of potential appeal that could happen, but it's a settlement. There's not a lot of talk about what the detail of the settlement is, but it does seem like it's good to go for him. So I'm really, 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 really happy for him. And now, you know, because that's the thing. Bob will probably want a couple options on you. Al will probably want that too. And if you're going to come and just beat a fighter and dip, even beyond the rematch clause, it's like, whoa, I got to, you know, that's how the business works, unfortunately. And I got to, if I'm going to let you at some of these guys, I got to know you're going to be with me for a couple years or whatever, a couple fights. So it's not just take the money and run type stuff. And that's just how it goes, you know, unfortunately. But that was always the big sticking point. The more people he was stopping and the great performances and whatnot, a lot of people were just chalking it up to everybody's ducking him. And don't get me wrong, some dudes are going to duck him. I mean, of these veteran dudes, some of them aren't going to want to fight him, right? But he also just his wasn't right, so that plays into it. That plays a major part into it, actually. So that's good news. That's really, really good news. So Ken Porter did an interview with Boxing Social, and he's talked about it in other places too, about this whole, you know, Porter stuff. And so, you know, he basically was like, hey, we went in the office to try to get this Crawford fight popping off. You know, a lot of people want it. We know that Bud has one fight on his deal, and Bob's come out and said we're going to fight him in September, which kind of sucks, right? I mean, he fought in November. Now he's got to wait till September. But in October, his deal's up. So whether he re-ups with him or not, you know, I'm not saying, oh, go sign with Heyman, you have to. I would do that personally. I mean, if you're on pay-per-view, Heyman's going to take less percentage on pay-per-view than Bob. That's just a fact. But, you know, you're just more on even playing field more, as much as that's going to be. But Trampler, Bruce Trampler, who's, you know, a great source inside, you know, when say sources say, now this is Bruce Trampler. He's very active on Twitter saying stuff about a variety of stuff. And Porter basically said, hey, we went in to talk to Bob. Bob said, I'm not going to make an offer at this point. And they said, you know, well, what's just tell us a number at least. I'm not going to make an offer at this point. So they said, nah, we're good. And Trampler, you know, chimed in on Twitter like he does with a variety of stuff. And he said, Ken Porter, and this is right below the Boxing Social little cut, you know, clip, audio clip of it. Ken Porter is a good man and gave an accurate account of the matters, but reality is that it's too costly for what the fighters want to be paid without fans. And the whole without fans, like, without fans, dog, do you know what's going on? Shit, even in a blue state progressive, whatever you want to, it's not as progressive as you think up here in Minnesota, but, you know, we're about to open up shit here. You know, it's going to be full capacity in a couple of weeks at a Target Field for the Twins. Like, the Armory is going to open up. Shit's opening up. So, but he says, everyone wants it, but it doesn't belong in Florida or Texas. It's Vegas or New York, you know, because big names in New York. But that's what he said. That's what he said. So that fight's off the table, you know, and obviously we know that Crawford has a healthy minimum straight up, no matter who he fights. We also now we know from last summer that he gets an extra mil every fight that's not Pacquiao or Spence, so that would be an extra mil. And then of course, you know, you can't shortchange Porter. You got to give him some money. He got paid to fight Danny and Thurman, and he got paid to fight Spence, which was one of the best fights of the year that year, so he's probably going to want some money in that realm, right? So, you know, it is what it is. You could call it a cop-out to say, why don't you just put it someplace? But, you know, I understand the Florida-Texas thing. You're right, he's got a point, but, it is what it is. I didn't really expect this fight to happen. I've never really expected it. They've done a bunch, you know, last couple of years, they've done a bunch of press runs with it. That's just what they've done. I mean, you know, he beat Danny Garcia, Porter did, and then they were trying to talk about Danny Garcia. Porter just can't sell. And then Spence beat Porter, and he's like, hey, Porter's our next fight. And it did actually seem like Bob, before the pandemic, may have leaned that way. But a lot of times it's just a press run, so it gets people all pumped up during fight week, and then he fights Mean Machine or whatever. So, you know, it is what it is. It's going to be really interesting to see what Bud Crawford, you know, does. You know, will he extend again with Top Rank? I mean, at this point, why? I know it's good money, but you don't think he can make some good money without? That would be, in a lot of things he's saying about that fight's done, I don't even want to talk about that fight. I'm past it with Spence. That's ridiculous too, as we know, because it's never even been negotiated yet. So it's not like you went through these hellish negotiations and then, oh, Spence pulled out the last second. Man, screw this kid. You know, you could point fingers at both guys. The one thing I've always said is Spence, to Bob and Crawford's face, said exactly what he was going to do. I'm going to knock all these pins down and then finalize it with you. So whether he fights Ugas, whether he fights Pacquiao next, I don't know, Spence, you know. But we'll see. We will see on that one. I don't really know what's going to happen with that. But if we get Wilder Fury, we get AJ Usyk and get Ruiz Ortiz, heavyweight matchups in the top 10, that's not a bad run. Now, of course, AJ and Fury is the fight that everybody wanted to see. But back to what we were talking about earlier, there's plenty of shit to, you know, to give to Wilder for all of his excuses. We already went over that a long time ago. But this right here was this shit. What everyone now, people are, oh, he ducked this fight. And then all of a sudden, he wanted it. He wanted to push it back. Dude, they weren't even in control of the fight. ESPN and Top Rank were in control. They had the 60-40. They were doing the broadcasting of it. Bob Arum came out and said, it's our best bet to try to get a gate. We're going to push it back from October to December. So when they push that back, that's on them, not Wilder. Wilder and Fury, just to reiterate, were both ready to go in October. And a lot of people are saying, well, he wasn't ready to go. We didn't even see videos of Wilder training, as if that fucking matters. Like, you know why he was ready to go? Because he exercises rematch clause, dude. And when it got pushed back, he was willing to push it back. Yeah, I'll fight then, no problem. But as long as he was ready to go in October before the clause, that's all that matters, as we saw in this arbiter case. So, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. All right. So we'll just kind of wrap it up with boxing Twitter stuff, news stuff, and all that good stuff. There are some – actually, Bob Arum talked about it. He said – this is what he said to ESPN. We're not paying Wilder to step aside. It's better to get rid of him. We could fight Fury AJ in November or December, July 24th. At that new Alliance Stadium, excuse me, in Vegas. So it's probably going to be in that stadium, which even if it's not full capacity, at least a stadium gives you more room to spread out the fans rather than the MGM. If it's not full capacity, I hope it is, but we'll see. I'm not saying they're going to sell out the stadium. I'm saying the capacity, it does kind of help you if you got a bigger space, but we'll see. There is rumors from Igis Klamos that Virgil Ortiz and Mean Machine Kavalauskas talks to fight. So that could be that. I think that's a decent stepping stone. Here's Henry Ramirez. Love seeing Danny Roman on the world class stage. Kid started his pro career 7-2-1 and kept plugging away. Signed with Thompson Boxing. And now he's a former, you know, world champ and still in the mix at the world level. 7-2-1 he started, and look where he's at right now. Anybody judging the whole sport of boxing right now because of old dude exhibitions and the little that isn't happening is just telling their own misery in the sport. Okay, because we've had a couple of good weeks. Oh, this is from Coppinger. Gilberto Zerto Ramirez against Sullivan Barrera, July 9th on DAZN. The co-feature I like, Jojo Diaz and Javier Fortuna. So that's an interesting fight. That was obviously the date that Ryan Garcia was going to go. So, yeah. Okay, this is more, let's see. Oh, and then Estrada Chocolatito Trilogy is aiming for September, October. I'm glad they gave these guys a little bit of rest. Oh, June 19th. We talked about this last week. On June 19th, boxing premieres its latest creation, four mismatches in a shit show. only the sport boxing can fill out an entire day of fights and not a single one be somewhat close on paper. No shit. That is just a shit show of a weekend, no doubt about it. The WBO has issued a show cause, I thought it said clause, this is Jake Donovan, letter to Eddie Hearn, who has 48 hours, and this is from noon today, 48 hours to show proof of showdown between Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua before being free, you know, to be free of the restrictions to be able to fight. Failure to do so will force the WBO, as we know, for the mandatory challenger, which is Usyk. And Coppinger's come out and said that fight is looking at August 21st and August 28th if that fight goes. But like we heard before, you know, that Eddie Hearn said a couple different options. This is actually him on Matchroom Boxing. If Team Fury don't get their act together by the end of the week, we got to move on. We will have no option but to look at an alternative fight. Anthony Joshua wants to fight this summer, you know, against Usyk. We have two or three options, is what he said. So, but it does sound like they're already exchanging texts. That's what the Oleksandr's K2 promoter said. So they're already starting to get that going. So we'll see. We will see on that one. Okay, here's some more boxing Twitter stuff. Is it possible for Fury to accept a fight with Wilder on 9/21/21? I think it was 9/15, not 9/21. But anyway, and go ahead to fight AJ in August and then retire on August 31st. I think if Team Fury is serious about a fight with AJ, they could come up with something. And just to reiterate that whole thing about just give step-aside money to Wilder and he'll get the winner. Dude, you have to renegotiate that. I keep getting these messages. AJ, dude. AJ has to be okay with that. I'm not saying they're going to duck Wilder. I'm just saying, as is, they couldn't just verbally over the phone, hey, are you cool with that? You cool with that? Okay, cool. All right, we're going to fight and we'll give you the winner. Nah, dude, they'd have to renegotiate. This is back in March. Per contract, there was a deadline. That date came and went. As far as I know, Fury's side is clear to move ahead. Worst case scenario, they have to give Wilder some money, and we still get the fight. That is, that didn't look that good. Anyone find a reason to give that round to Canelo or otherwise just, what did he say? Hold on. This is Tom Gray. Anyone find a reason to give that to Canelo, meaning the last round, other than not liking Saunders? I have Saunders up 5-2. Anthony Joshua claims he chose not to stop Andy Ruiz to prove a point that he could box. That's why he didn't knock him out. Uh-oh, this is Jake Paul. A month ago, every MMA fighter was like, I'll box Jake Paul and beat the fuck out of him. Now everyone's like, I'll fight him, but it has to be in the MMA. It's only a real fight, he said. That's pretty funny. You know what's funny? Mike Coppinger, you know, he said, who cares about Caleb Plant? He's got the same style as Billy Joe Saunders. No one wants to fight to watch that fight. He's got the same style. But, you know, he also tweeted, Billy Joe didn't get the win, and he didn't go the distance, but he boxed beautifully and surely earned himself another big opportunity. That's what he said for Billy Joe Saunders, that he boxed beautifully and earned a right at another big opportunity. But who gives a shit about Caleb because they got the same styles? Huh, funny. Last night showed AJ why will beat Fury, Billy Joe Saunders. That was weird. Yesterday proved all these so-called fighting men like Billy Joe and Tyson Fury was just rubbish. We never quit. We're fighting men, born and bred. AJ is the Canelo of the heavyweight division, power, precise punching. Tyson Fury is Billy Joe, slick boxing, and with a quitter's mentality. AJ will make Fury quit on the stool guaranteed. Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, if he wanted to quit, he had every reason to quit Fury when he got knocked, what looked to be out for a while. He could have. Who would have talked shit about Fury for just staying on the ground looking like he was passed out or knocked out in that 12th round in the first fight? He got up, so you're talking about a quitter. And, you know, how many guys that want to stay in the fight, talking about AJ and Ruiz in the first fight, walk away from the ref, turn their back on the ref, and put their arms up and just go nonchalant? No, you got to prove that you're okay. I'm not saying he quit. I'm just saying he quit. No, I'm just kidding. There is actually Mayweather suing a company for at least $122 million for failure to bring that Paul fight to Dubai. This is TMZ. I don't know what the hell that. Will Fury get a payout from the arbitration? Fury, and this is what I'm talking about. Fury was ready to fight Wilder by May 2020. Dog, the first fight was scheduled, or the rematch was scheduled in July. That was the first date they were looking at. So you're telling me he was ready in May 2020? Do you guys know what was going on at that time? Did you already forget? Wilder wasn't. The promoters went, and neither of them, the promoters weren't, and neither were the networks, but Fury was. Any combination of people can be blamed for the fight, but not Fury. Fury was begging and demanding to have the third fight by December and was told no. If anybody's the victim, it's Fury. Although out of Fury's own mouth, he said, I should have just fought this last January and February, which was the alternative dates, and that both networks had agreed upon, and Bob was on board too. He said it, but he tried to go get more money fighting, you know, I guess you could say a less powerful fighter. Which I don't hate on him for, but it, right now it doesn't seem like it worked. No idea what's going to happen next, but watch how the narrative shifts to Wilder block the fight we all wanted to see rather than Fury, sheer stupidity and unwillingness to honor the legal binding contract. And that's the thing. We go back to that Ruiz. Remember when people were like, let's just see Ruiz and Wilder fight undisputed. No, dude, he's got a contract. The media was saying he has a contract for the second fight. And you have to, you know, he had to honor that contract. But for some odd reason, Fury doesn't have to honor his contract. It's the same shit over and over. This is Tom Gray again. Wait up. Is Tyson Fury going to wait a second. What the hell is that? This is way unfocused. Someone just sent me this. Hold on. Is Tyson Fury going to get a hard time for a replacement opponent that he's only taken because Wilder balked at the third fight this year? It's so funny. Their side wasn't even in control of the fight anymore, dude. Like I said, there's so much to say about Wilder as far as all those excuses. But when it comes to this, dog, seriously? I mean, the guy admitted it. Tyson Fury, out of his own mouth, said, I should have just went and fought Wilder. I fucked up. Anyway, let's get out of here. Hope you guys enjoy the fight. This is going to be a good fight, though. It's going to be a really good fight. Enjoy it. We'll be back next week. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years, of straight survival, the bullshit, the whole bag.